Thank you for checking out the Cinema Scumbags Movie Podcast. If you enjoy the show, please leave us a review on iTunes. And make sure to subscribe to Slacker Media on YouTube for more content. Enjoy the show. Hey, what's going on, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of the Cinema Scumbags Movie Podcast, episode 161. My name's Seth.
I'm a wizard, Harry.
We got Nick joining us live from the Great Hall at Hogwarts.
What house will I be in?
And
Stay tuned.
And I'm in Diagon Alley.
Is that Diagon Alley? Thought it was Hogsmeade.
And we don't have green screen, so the effects look like shit, but if you're watching the video...
They're more endearing.
If you're watching the video, enjoy them anyways. How's it going, man?
It's going all right. I'm very excited to talk about what we're going to talk about in this episode. Been thinking about it all day.
Yeah. We were just kind of brainstorming stuff to do this week, and the 20th anniversary of the first Harry Potter film. They're making a big deal about that. There's going to be a special on HBO. Nick's a big fan. I'm a big fan. We watched the films multiple times. We thought, hey, we've never done a Harry Potter-themed episode where we kind of go through those films and talk about all sorts of things relating to them. And why not? Let's do it for the 20th anniversary.
Why not? Well, and plus, I've been doing another marathon recently, so, you know, a couple of them are fresh in my mind. I haven't gone back and watched all of them yet. Probably going to watch Goblet of Fire tonight, but, man, those films, they're something else.
Yeah, I actually picked up the 4K set not too long ago, and finally, just like last week, finally finished up, marathoned them. So good. Lots of things to say.
Where do we even begin? From the beginning. From the beginning, well, obviously they started out as books written by J.K. Rowling. I think it's Rowling, actually.
What was your introduction to the Harry Potter universe, I guess?
That's a great question.
Read the books?
I did. I read the books thoroughly. I went to the midnight releases to pick up the books. I saved all the money I could at that time as a youngster to put on layaway for the DVDs at Kmart.
Okay.
Pick up the DVDs when they released. So, you know, it was like a yearly thing.
So you read all the books?
I did not read the last one. I still have not to this day.
Okay.
But I have like all the original hardcover versions of them. Still have those in pretty good condition, which is exciting.
Nice.
I can remember specifically watching the last one in theaters, though. That was an experience.
Yeah.
Which we'll probably get to.
I read the first four books, and that was... I read up to the fourth book. That was before the other ones even came out, so I stopped at that point. And then I just never, as the other books came out, I never read them. So I only made it up to the fourth book. I remember going to see the first movie the day it came out in the theater. That's the only one I saw in the theater. And for many years, I'd only seen the first two films.
Yeah.
I don't know why. Those are the only ones I'd saw. Only like a couple years ago did I finally watch all of the films. So... that first movie I've seen 50 times. Even the second one I've seen 50 times.
It's almost kind of surprising that you love them like you do, because you didn't really grow up with them.
No.
I mean, the normal sense.
I was really into those first four books, you know? I mean, like, when that first movie came out, I was, like, super excited for it, you know? So, I don't know. I think I just kind of, because I never finished the books, I never felt like, you know, I remember those movies coming out every couple years, and... Deathly Hallows Part 2, and I just never, you know, I didn't really care, I guess, because I never finished the books, and I just kind of ignored it until just a few years ago. So it's a weird path with Harry Potter.
It is, and I never watched the movies in theaters.
Okay.
I feel like I have a special selfish, connection to them, because the first one, the movie, came out on my birthday in 2001.
Okay.
And then every year they came out, they'd come out around November. It was right. We're going to go see Harry Potter for the birthday.
Right.
And yeah, it was Wait, a big
so,
deal growing
so did
up.
You watch all of them in the theater, or you didn't watch them in the theater?
No, I didn't watch them in the theater. I okay. think the first one that I recall actually seeing in the theater was part one of okay. Deathly Hallows.
Okay.
And then part yeah. two, obviously.
It's... We'll probably never see anything else in our lifetime that's like as big as that is, you know? Mm. The whole Harry
Marvel
Potter thing.
Maybe?
Yeah, I mean, it's just crazy that even now, it's still huge. Half of the Universal parks are Harry Potter themed now. I mean, it's more popular now than ever. It's pretty crazy.
Yeah, the parks, the reunions, the spinoffs, the fan yeah. fiction, fan art that... was created because of it.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I've got a lot of things to say about the series, and I don't
the
know
the movie specifically as we go.
Yeah, I mean, this is for the 20th anniversary of the first film. The books have been around. I don't know, when did that first book come out? 97 or something like that.
97, yeah,
97. So we're going off the films here. Yeah, hard to believe. Hard to believe.
We won't
that
be talking about the books. We're very well aware that there's a lot of stuff that was cut out,
yeah,
put in the movies and all that, and we're not going to delve into that. We're just going to talk about the movies themselves, yeah, and our relationship to them.
Yeah. Dude, I keep cutting out. This is distracting me.
What are you cutting out of? It looks fine.
Does it?
Yeah.
We're using some really janky effects, so if you're watching the video, you'll see what we're talking about. But we wanted to have oh God, look, I got my invisibility cloak on. My body's gone.
My body's gone.
Anyways, though.
The invisibility booster must be faulty.
We were just talking before we recorded this. These are like the, I don't know, they're so easy to watch, I guess. And the movies are all kind of long, you know, like, you've heard me make jokes on here. Oh, it's got to be a 90-minute movie, or I'm not interested, or whatever.
Yeah. I mean,
these movies are all pretty lengthy, but for some reason, they're just so quick.
They're easy to watch.
Yeah.
Well, that Chamber of Secrets, like 2 hours, 40 minutes. I think it's the longest one in the whole
franchise.
That
one's long. Yeah, that one's long. Feels a little long.
That one does a little bit. We'll talk about that a little bit later.
Yeah.
But it's crazy, too, because... when these books came out, at least when the first one came out, it was kind of seen as like just shelf dirt.
Right.
Nobody really cared about it.
Yeah.
And I guess it says a secretary who read it and gave it to David Heyman, who produced all of them. And if you've ever watched any of the special feature, anything really, you've probably seen this guy. You probably know who he is. He's got one of those familiar faces if you're at all invested in the franchise. But, he originally disliked him. He called him rubbish.
Wow.
He disliked the rubbish title and read the book himself, and he was impressed. So she actually only sold the rights for the first four books to Warner Brothers for £1 million or $2 million.
Jesus.
So, but she's reaped the benefits, that's for sure.
Oh, for sure. And, you know, we won't get into all of it. There's a lot of controversy around her nowadays, but... That goes to show you how big Harry Potter is, because even with that, it's just like kind of brushed aside, you know, like this yeah. transcends the creator, you know what I mean? Which is pretty amazing.
It goes way beyond. Well, she was a billionaire, I guess.
Yeah.
The rumor is she lost her billionaire status because of how much money she's given away.
Yeah.
Which, you know, if that's the case, that's great.
Yeah. Well, you don't ever hear about that stuff.
No.
You know what always kind of crazy? I always think about it, like, with her, and I think about it with a guy like Stephen King or, you know, these authors. It's like, the fact that this shit all came out of her head, it's amazing, you know?
I think about stuff like that.
Yeah.
It's like, there was nothing, and then she had an idea.
Right. I mean, it's crazy, you know? To think that one lady had shit in her head that's now like at Universal Studios. It's half the parks at Universal. I mean,
it's real now.
It's insane. And I think, like I said, I think that was like Stephen King too. When you watch The Shining or whatever, Misery, just and all that shit.
Anything creative, it's just amazing to think that at first it was a thought,
yeah,
and then it became a reality in some way.
Yeah, it's nuts. I mean, like I said, it's kind of even though there's issues around her that a lot of people are vocal about nowadays, it's not enough to kind of take anything away from the Harry Potter franchise, which is pretty amazing.
Right. And it says she was she didn't want to sell the rights initially, but she was like on welfare. She was,
yeah, there's
in poverty. She was in a bad situation.
Damn. Fucking insane.
To think that you can go from where she was to where she is now over an idea.
Yeah, truly. And
she's been known, and I've seen videos where she's been known to be meticulous about the lineages of the families. She's got everything written down about who comes from where and who, yeah, what house this person's in. And
you almost have to. Like if she was, it gets so like complex with the different, there's... That stuff all has to be documented, or you could like really run into a bunch of plot holes and shit, you know?
Well, that's what's so weird about these Fantastic Beasts movies, is it seems like she's running into plot holes that she's had for years.
Yeah.
Plot holes and lineages and dates and stuff, things that,
yeah,
that you'd think she'd have squared away. But yeah, she's also known for like making stuff up as the, right, years go on.
It's like
Dumbledore wasn't initially gay. There wasn't always a... what this student wasn't always whatever this,
right,
she just kind of makes things up as she goes along, it seems at times.
It's I don't know, we'll get into it, but yeah, we're gonna take kind of a different approach to this episode. Not your conventional news and criterions and all that. We're strictly focused on the subject for today's discussion, 20 years, yeah, of HP. So should we just start here? How do we begin this?
Well, I think we should start with the process of finding the director.
Okay.
For the first one.
Let's do that.
Which I don't know if I had ever heard this before, but Steven Spielberg initially negotiated to direct the first film, and he declined.
Oh, fuck. Now,
imagine that.
Yeah, I mean, okay. Spielberg, he's not losing any sleep over everything. The guy's, done amazing films, but you wonder now, does he wish he would have done that,
Probably not.
Yeah.
Because the way he saw it was he knew it would make money. He had, right, no issues with that. What he thought was it was too easy. There was no challenge to making it.
Oh, sorry, says, Steven.
He claimed, yeah, why don't you go make another Amistad, loser?
Yeah, Jesus.
He claims that making money would have been like shooting ducks in a barrel. It's just a slam dunk. It's just like withdrawing $1 billion and putting it into your personal bank account. There's no challenge. But Rowling maintains that she had no role in choosing the directors, and anyone who thinks I could have vetoed Spielberg needs their quick quotes quill serviced.
Yeah.
So I guess there's speculation that she didn't want it, but I guess it was Steven that didn't want it.
Yeah, now that's ridiculous. I mean, I agree with her. There's no fucking way that they would give her the power to say who's, she's could be a great author, but, that doesn't mean she's a visionary filmmaker. I mean...
Well, she's not a visionary screenplay,
yeah,
writer, that's for sure.
Yeah.
She can write a book, but not a, yeah, screenplay.
No, I never knew Spielberg was even attached to any of that stuff. That's pretty interesting.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it kind of makes sense. A group of kids movie,
Yeah.
He's good with the magical without stuff being magical.
Right.
But after he left, they had conversations with a lot of directors. Now, think about... all these directors and think what kind of movie we would have had.
Okay.
Well, obviously you had Chris Columbus.
Okay.
Jonathan Demme.
Wow. What the
Terry
fuck?
Terry Gilliam.
Oh my God.
Mike Newell, who obviously went on to do Goblet of Fire.
Goblet of Fire.
Alan Parker. Wolfgang Peterson. Rob Reiner. Tim Robbins. Brad Sibbling. And Peter Weir.
Wow.
Peterson and Reiner both pulled out of the running in March 2000. It was then narrowed down to Columbus, Gilliam, Parker, and Sibbling.
I didn't know. No clue Terry Gilliam was that close to directing Harry Potter.
Well, Rowling's first choice was Terry Gilliam.
Wow.
Now, are you a fan of his?
I am. Yeah.
I don't.
Not a massive fan.
I don't know how. I don't think I would have liked how that turned out.
It would be weird. I mean, his films don't really have like, you know, like a lot of filmmakers or directors have like a style where you can kind of, his shit's all over the place, at least from what I've seen from him. You know, like you could watch his movies blind and it would be hard to associate them as being from one different or the same guy, you know?
Maybe like a Fisher King or something, but
yeah,
I think he does have a certain tone.
Yeah.
And he definitely has a certain comedic tone to his things.
God,
he was obviously part of the
Monty Python
group.
It's strange to think about.
But obviously, Chris Columbus took over in March 2000, citing his work on other family films such as Home Alone and Mrs. Doubtfire.
And wow. In retrospect,
great choice.
It's easy to talk in hindsight. I think it was fine. I think it was a great choice.
I think it was a great choice. He had the tough task of introducing this magical and mystical world, and I think he did really well at bringing everybody in, introducing everything, and making it palatable so people could understand like what this world was.
Did you go see this when it came out?
Like the day came out? I did not.
So yeah, you probably would have been like 8, maybe.
Yeah.
9, 8?
Yeah.
Okay, I would have been 11. And my God, I was so hyped for this because I loved those first few books, you know? Mm-hmm. And my dad went with me, who had no clue what any of the shit, you know, he didn't know what Harry Potter meant. So there's an example of somebody going into it blind. And I mean, he loved the movie. So,
Wow. Yeah,
I think it did do a good job of that. You know, I'm sure that was in their mind, like, okay, a lot of kids are going to be watching this with their parents who don't fucking know what Quidditch is and all that shit.
Yeah.
And I think it did a really good job of being accessible to anyone, you know?
It was, because even in that quick 3 to 5 minute scene with Wood and Harry, he's trying to explain to him what Quidditch is.
Yeah.
Real simple. This ball does this, this ball does this. These guys are beaters, chasers, seekers. Yeah. They use this bat. It's real simple. And they you know, obviously it's more detailed than that, but it gave you enough to know, like, the basics
to
understand.
I've got chills now thinking about that opening scene of that movie. I mean, really. I've got goosebumps thinking about it. And I remember being a kid, and when you fucking see Hagrid flying down on his motorcycle, that is...
Oh, my fucking God.
That's amazing, and it still is. I mean, you know, I watched this the other day, and I'm like, that part, my God, to see it brought to life. I could go to that theater now and tell you exactly where I was sitting. I remember it so vividly, but to see that brought to life, and then the music from John Williams. I mean, dude,
maybe definitely one of the greatest film scores ever.
God, I mean, it's fantastic. You know, it's amazing.
I don't like to throw the word genius around all that much, but John Williams is a fucking genius.
It's fucking, you know, and like when you're a kid, you don't really, you know, I didn't really realize John Williams, you know, you don't understand all that. But now when you watch it as an adult, you realize like how big that is to like had John Williams score that and this big popular book franchise brought to life. I mean, it's perfect. That opening scene of that movie is perfect. I love it.
They took it from, like we said, from nothing and just created a fucking living world.
Yeah.
With music and with, well, you can't talk about it without talking about the cast. And does it get any better than the cast?
And that was, I remember that too when Harry Potter was such a big deal. I remember when they found those kids to do that. And that was like a big news event, you know? I mean, it's really odd. Like, how often do you see that?
you usually get it after the fact, like Stranger Things or an It sort of thing.
Yeah, I mean, like, I mean, you remember those kids sitting down? There was like a press conference for them. It's like, what the fuck, dude?
You don't do that. It doesn't happen anymore.
So weird, you know.
And you know, it to think that maybe they could have had like a Boyhood situation where somebody didn't want to be a part of it
right.
anymore. I mean, they never thought they were going to make all these. And besides, not all the books were out yet.
Yeah, I mean, when they made this first one, what were there, three books out?
Three or four.
At this point,
the last book didn't come out till 2007.
That's a big time commitment. Big time commitment.
And what's crazy too is that they found Daniel Radcliffe just like at a theater sitting behind them.
Jesus Christ.
He had the look and they're like, that's the kid.
I mean, he looks like when I read those books in my head as a kid, that's what I envisioned he would look like, you know?
Yeah.
Perfect.
Rupert Grint, you know, maybe not the greatest actor, but he was born to play Ron Weasley.
I agree. And I think throughout that series, both of those guys have parts that are like a little, you know, you definitely see
acting
that.
Acting-wise?
Yeah, acting-wise.
Definitely in the first one, yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, I don't know. Even as an adult, I can kind of look past that. It doesn't really bother me because it's such a grand scale of a world, you know, that you just kind of brush that to the side. I don't know.
And they get better as they go along, too. The acting gets better.
Yeah.
Everything gets better. The only thing is that Hermione, the character, is like a geeky, ugly, nerdy
girl.
Yeah, with frizzy hair, and like she's a geek, and they made her, you know, at that time I was that age. She was hot.
I was 11. She was hot.
Yeah. Well, she's probably older than you anyway, right?
Yeah. So I'm allowed to say that.
I mean, she, Hermione, Emma Watson was like my first crush. That was like my sexual awakening.
Can't blame you there, my brother.
But that's not who the character was. Granted, who gives a shit at this point? But
right. I mean, like I said, wasn't a huge super fan of the books, but I mean, I couldn't think of any way you could cast those three roles better. I mean, it's great.
Yeah, and to think they really had no acting experience.
That's incredible.
Daniel Radcliffe was in a BBC show, David Copperfield.
Now,
television production, but the Emma Watson and Rupert Grint were only in school plays.
So you've got this major book franchise that you're going to turn into a huge film series in your head. You know, that was the plan or whatever, yeah. The first few. You get John Williams to score it. You've got Chris Columbus, and your lead actor is this fucking random kid who's really hasn't acted. Incredible. Incredible.
I don't think people really put into perspective how much of a gamble it was.
It's a huge gamble. Huge gamble.
It's a big deal. And then, of course, you bring in Steve Clovis to do the screenplays, and he did all of them except for Order of the Phoenix.
Okay.
So he obviously needs a ton of credit for everything he did. Because those books, they're tough to adapt. There's a whole universe, and I think for the most part he did pretty well.
And I think that was some of the issues that people still have with some of the later books, is the books got longer and there was stuff that had to be cut out and readjusted to make it a film. And I know those first two books are, I believe, the shortest of the books.
They are. Yeah.
So they could, I think that, you know, maybe Spielberg had a point that it was easy, I guess. I don't know, you know, because they knew everything was going to be able to fit.
Yeah, I'm in the camp that I would watch 4 or 5 hour cuts of these
movies. Oh my God, me too.
I don't even care.
Yeah, me too. Never with any of these movies do I feel like, oh Jesus, it's dragging, let's go. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's very weird because I usually get like that, you know?
Yeah. Well, I mean, we can kind of talk about different things as we go along because directors change. Cinematographers changed,
yeah.
even composers changed, but we might as well start with number one, Harry Potter, and the Philosopher's Stone.
Yes, for the sophisticated English audience.
Released in India, United States, and the Philippines as Sorcerer's Stone for whatever reason.
Because we're idiots and we need
we don't know the philosopher?
No, Sorcerer sounds like a magician. Veruca, sweetheart, I'm not a magician.
Do we not know what a philosopher is?
Nope.
I don't know. It's always bothered me. But my box set has, well, at least the regular Blu-ray box set has philosophers on it.
Well, what's weird about that is they would have had to, they recorded like separate lines, you know?
They did, because they...
This is so odd.
There's a scene where they go to Hagrid's hut,
Yeah.
We know about the Philosopher's Stone.
Yeah, yeah,
we
yeah.
know about the Sorcerer's Stone.
So it's like, that's really strange. They had
why would you put that out? I mean, obviously, the United States is a massive market, but couldn't teach us what a philosopher was?
I'm sure it was just all a marketing thing. Like, sorcerer just sounds magical, I guess. I don't know. Whatever. That first movie is... There are so many scenes in that. I appreciate that one a little more each time I watch it because it was the introduction to all that stuff, you know? Mm-hmm. I mean, my
that
God.
All the heavy lifting.
Yeah, the first time when fucking Hagrid comes knocking the door down, I mean, you're seeing the shit that you've read about as a kid, and it's all brought to life, and it's like, what the fuck, dude? And the scene when, you know, the boats are going across the water and you see Hogwarts for the first time.
Oh, my fucking God.
I mean, dude, like...
It's
and you watch
truly...
that now, you realize how big of a deal that is, you know? Like, how big of a deal that movie is.
And I think they hit me more now.
I agree.
Because I understand and appreciate it. Not to mention, it makes me feel nostalgic for childhood.
Yeah.
But nostalgic in a way that doesn't hinder my ability to see what these movies are. I think that they're all good movies.
Yeah.
I don't think they're good because I watched them growing up.
No,
I think
they're
good.
I definitely have some criticism with some of them, and there's some that I like a lot more than others, but... Man, I don't know. Just you know, the other day when I was rewatching that first one, it's like all these big moments. And, you know, God, when you see the Hogwarts Express for the first time, and you realize how big in scale all this shit is. It's fuck, it's amazing. Like I said, opening scene, incredible. God,
I think one of the amazing things too is, and I'm curious for like our British audience, or, you know, anybody who's over in the United Kingdom or anything like that. I didn't know who any of these people were in these movies. They were all foreign to me.
Yeah, yeah.
But they're all big British, Irish,
right.
Scottish, whatever actors who were big already over there. Like, they were all in different movies and shows.
Yeah.
And stage actors. But, like, I know these people as these characters because that's all I ever knew watching them.
I mean, yeah, Richard Harris, that's his name, right?
Yeah.
I mean, he was a big deal. I don't know shit about him.
Yeah.
I still don't, you know, but all I know is that first fucking shot when he comes walking out of the woods, like, I got chills thinking about it, man.
He's not Richard Harris. He's fucking Dumbledore.
No. God damn, dude. So
Robbie
awesome.
Robbie Coltrane was big. He was in Goldeneye.
Yep.
Warwick Davis, obviously. Richard Griffiths. John Hurt, I mean, Alan Rickman,
Rickman.
The cast is just incredible.
Oh, man.
And I think it really helped me, like, get involved in the illusion, because these were the characters. They
yeah,
were
to us.
I knew.
Yeah, I mean, it's not like seeing Tom Hanks or, you know, some big fucking American actor. These were all new people to us, so... Yeah, I agree with that.
I feel like that's a big problem I have personally with these new Fantastic Beasts movies is I know everybody that's
right.
in these movies.
Right.
The illusion is gone.
Yeah, no, I agree with that.
I wouldn't say it's the fault of the movies or anything because I'm older. I know more actors.
Right.
We're film guys, but...
We're Blu-ray collectors, bud.
It's lost its luster. Compared to what it was watching these movies growing up.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. I mean, what do you think about the first movie?
I've always loved it, but I think this most recent time I realized that it is like a masterpiece as far as fantasy movies go.
I think it's a masterpiece. I mean, you know, the movies get more serious as they get older and the tone changes. I mean, this is a kid's movie. They're very young and it's a kid's film.
Straight up a kid's movie.
But... Man, it was so broad in scope, and this is the film that introduces us to all these things. And it's like, I don't know, it's like one moment after the other. It's like heavy hitting moment, and they keep coming. And there's Hagrid. Oh, here's mm-hmm. Platform 9¾. You know, it's like all this shit that you read about, and it's all brought to life like in a perfect way. And I don't know. We'll get to our ranking and shit at the end, how we feel about these movies. I don't think this is the best one, but I think this is my favorite of the series.
That's... I would probably agree.
Yeah. It's so,
it's
I don't
the
know.
One I know the most.
Yeah.
It's the one that introduced us to the world. And despite it being a kid's movie, I think it's still like, it doesn't take on the mature themes. It's just magical.
Right. Yeah. And it's 20 years old now. I mean, fuck, dude, it still looks really good. Some of those Quidditch scenes, the CGI is a little, you know,
the troll,
but man,
Voldemort looks pretty good though. Still.
That's awesome. I love that shit, man.
It's just, it's really interesting watching it now though, and seeing where it was and where they were compared to now.
Because, where it ended up, yeah.
Because when Voldemort's on the back of Quirrell's head, they're not thinking, okay, this is going to be Ralph Fiennes a few
right.
years from now.
Yeah. And I mean, at this point, like you said, none of those other those ending books were out yet. They had no clue this was going to end in some big battle at Hogwarts. I mean, it's really amazing when you think about all that shit, because it's, yeah, who would have known which way it's going to go?
Oops. Yeah, I don't think Chris Columbus gets enough credit for what he was able to do with these movies.
Yeah.
And what he started. What do you get thrown off by the different tones of the directors, or do you not mind it? Because once we get to 3, everything changes.
Well, to me, it's, and I know at, when you get to 3, there's some different directors mixed in. What is 3?
Alfonso Cuarón.
Okay, Alfonso Cuarón, then what's it, Mike and Newell?
Mike Newell, and then David Yates has done everything.
And then
since.
Yates is the rest of the way. To me, 3 to the end all kind of blend together. There's two separate vibes. Those first two movies, and then it gets dark. And even though there's some different directors mixed in, those all kind of blend together for me that as being like kind of the same tone wise, but literally everything gets darker for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, even the intros. Which,
oh yeah.
What's your favorite intro? Your favorite title card?
I gotta tell you, man, I just love the first one because it's just the way it was. I mean, it was introducing us to everything, you know?
And it goes into his scar.
Oh man, God!
I think about part 2 and just the Lily's theme playing in the background. There's like a sense of just absolute dread. It's quiet.
Yeah.
You see Snape, and you just realize, fuck, this is.
Let me ask you. I mean, because it's, I'm sure you know what I'm saying here, but when you watch these back to back real quick and you knock them out in a week or whatever, you can kind of see where it starts to get a little like, okay, here's a year later, oh, Harry's in more trouble. It gets a little follows a formula kind of. Do you feel that way?
Oh yeah.
It's
yeah,
like,
there's
you know,
the beginning drama, whatever it is.
Yeah.
The title card and then
right. And I feel that mostly with 1 and 2. It's like you have that big thing at the end with the stone and all that. And then it's like, if you go right into part 2, oh, there's trouble at Hogwarts again. And you jump right back into, when they came out, you didn't watch them that way, like back to back to back. But I always watch them like that. And it gets a little, you can start to see where it's following the formula, I guess. But, you know, whatever.
I wonder if it was partly because they didn't know where it was going.
Yeah.
So they almost treated each movie like a standalone thing.
That could be it. That could be it. I don't know. These are just, I can never just watch one movie out of the series, though. It's always like a big event for me.
I really don't ever feel like I'd want to watch them out of order.
I agree.
Even though there's been times where I've just thrown in the last one just because, but
yeah.
Do I need a refresher on the series to know where it goes?
Yeah, no, I agree with that. It's always like an event, you know, you gotta knock them all out.
Well, just, I think it's cool because Harry acts as like a surrogate for us because he doesn't know anything about the world either.
Right.
So he's getting the letters. He's, all these weird things are happening. He's talking to a snake. He has weird visitors coming around.
Yeah.
It's just like, we're in Diagon Alley with him.
It's
with
fucking,
Hagrid.
It's fucking awesome.
They're introducing it to him while introducing it to us.
Yeah. And, you know, you already said it, but masterful, masterful score. Oh, my God. I think about this music all the time. Okay, when he's in Ollivander's getting his wand, And when Ollivander has the realization that, oh shit, there could be some sort of, oh, I know, you know, I know what's going on here. There's this little jingle that plays.
Oh my God.
I don't know. It's like not, I can't even, whew. I don't know what it's referred to in the actual track listing, but you know exactly what I'm talking about. Oh, it's perfect.
That's correct. The stepping stones are laid throughout the whole series, though.
Yeah. No, they are. They are.
He knows, I wonder if this wand is going to work.
Yeah.
Like, fuck. Why would he get that inclination?
Right.
It's crazy.
Man, fucking A. So good.
Like, what do we even say about the first one?
It's fantastic.
Do we go through the step by step of the plot?
I mean, we'd probably be here 8 hours if we did that with each movie, but this is the one I'm the most familiar with because I've seen it over and over again. You know?
Yeah, and there was a time in my life where I didn't watch the movies. There was a time, I think, after Goblet of Fire where I kind of took a break and didn't watch Order or Half-Blood Prince.
Yeah.
Which is just like a really dark time. I don't know what happened to me.
A dark time.
But, oh, God, just... It's hard to put into words.
It really is. Now it just makes me want to watch it, and I just watched them like a week ago, but I mean, I could watch that first one right now, you know?
Mm-hmm. And then it takes you down a whole path. Like, step by step, Diagon Alley, Gringotts, Hogwarts.
Yeah, like I said, it's this one is so special because it's the first time seeing any of this stuff, you know? And the way it was brought to life, it didn't disappoint. You could now I watch it and think, Christ Almighty, this was an expensive film.
Yeah,
I mean, you know, it's like Jesus,
$125 million.
Oof. What is the most? I think Half Blood Prince is the most expensive in the series.
I think there's three that were $250 million.
Oof, man, oh man.
But this one made $1 billion, and oddly enough, this and the last one are the only two that ever made $1 billion.
Jesus, you know, I gotta say. I get maybe it's some criticism, but the one part I always kind of tune out in these movies. I mean, I watch it. I like it, but
right.
I could do without so much Quidditch, I guess. That's a little like...
See, Quidditch in the first one is great.
It's awesome because we haven't seen it before.
There's a lot going on, especially because they think Snape is the one jinxing the broom.
Yeah, and I also will say Quidditch makes no sense.
Why? The scoring system?
The scoring system makes no sense. What's the point of even scoring points? Why don't they just have everyone trying to catch the snitch?
Well, because if you get enough points, even if you catch the snitch, you won't win. You only get 150 points. You don't win.
If you score a goal, it's, what, 10 points?
10 points. So you could be up 200-0. If they catch the snitch, they still lose.
But then why would you even try to catch the snitch if you're the losing team's seeker?
Because that's the only way the game ends.
Okay.
So the strategy is to score enough points to where you catch the snitch,
and then
it ends the game, and you win.
Well, I guess I don't know what I'm talking about. Bloody hell.
Yeah.
I'm your host, Lee Jordan.
I always thought Lee Jordan was a chick growing up. 10 points to Gryffindor!
There's a lot of weird things. I mean, this is hard to kind of go into a true outline with this episode because there's so much to say, but there's a lot of weird things in like these movies where... Like, one movie, you'll see certain kids that are featured prominently. Like, just even as background, they're just, like, students. And then the next year, they're not there, and you don't ever see them again. So, I don't know.
Like
it's strange.
Colin Creevy in the second one.
Yeah, what happened to him? Why is he, like, suddenly out of school forever?
Well, I'm sure there's an explanation on the Wikipedia or something.
And then I think it's, like...
Potterpedia.
I think it's Goblet of Fire. Yeah, I think it's Goblet of Fire. There's, like, this random black guy that, like... They cut to him a couple times, and he even says a line, and then like you don't ever see him again.
Not Dean,
the one that
Ginny gets with.
No. It's like this. It's this other black dude in that chick's class with the fortune ball.
What about What about the black dude? Yeah, in Trelawney's class. The omen of
death. And then like you don't ever see him again. It's like what happened to that guy?
I mean, maybe he comes back because I know they made it a point in part two to bring back characters that had not been around in a long time.
Yeah.
Like, you hadn't seen Pomfrey or...
That's true. That's true.
Mrs. Pomfrey or...
Yeah.
Who's the herbologist?
Sprout?
Yeah, you didn't see Sprout until that last movie.
Like, okay, Madam Hooch teaches them how to ride their brooms. She's never seen again.
Yeah. I'd like to ride her Madam Snooch.
I'm guessing
like a cat too.
Guessing it's probably because like she served no other purpose
other than a background character.
Yeah, that was it. The only prominent part she had was teaching them to ride brooms, you know.
Yeah, who gives a shit about the third years riding broomsticks when they come in?
Nobody should care about whether she's in it or not, but I've seen them too many times.
Well, it's not to mention that the actors and the characters change a lot.
Yeah.
Obviously, Albus Dumbledore changed, which was probably the biggest of them all.
I could spend an hour talking about that.
Well, let's go ahead and talk about it, because she changed majorly.
Richard Harris is awesome.
How they ever thought he was going to make... Well, I guess
they didn't know.
Gonna make that
and
movie.
I never thought about that until now, until we were talking about that, because we talked about it amongst ourselves, but when you get to Order of the Phoenix, Dumbledore appears in the Ministry of Magic, and he's like fucking dueling Voldemort. Like, there's no fucking way Richard Harris could have ever done that.
No, but I don't want to jump ahead, but that scene is like one of the best in the franchise.
That's one of my favorite movies in the franchise, honestly. But I don't know. I love Richard Harris.
I'm trying to think of a way we could. There's no real script to this.
We're not going to be able to cover everything about every movie, or we'll be here forever. But yeah, that was a big part of the films, was the Dumbledore thing. Richard Harris unfortunately died after Chamber of Secrets. He's just, I don't know. That was like exactly what I had in my head of what Dumbledore was like. Just like a slow, methodical,
grandfatherly,
typical wizard, you know, like. And
he's tired.
Yeah, who's the other guy? Michael Gambon?
Gambon, yeah.
He's very good. Very good.
Yeah. It's just a different portrayal.
Just different.
More energetic.
Energetic, yes.
Quippy?
Yeah, it just... Okay, you know in Goblet of Fire when he chews him out for putting his name in the
Goblet of Fire?
Okay, imagine Richard Harris
Dumbledore
doing that.
Dumbledore said calmly.
Yeah, could you ever imagine Richard Harris doing that, like, his Dumbledore?
If they did it like the book where he says it calmly, sure.
I don't know. I mean, it's unfortunate that he died. I think Michael Gambon he did a good job, though. But I just, when I think of Dumbledore, I think of those first two movies.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Plus, he gets comedic. There's the part in Prisoner of Azkaban where they're about to use the time turner.
Yeah.
And he goes and walks over to Ron, and he, like, puts his arm on his hurt ankle.
Yeah,
like, that's not something Richard Harris Dumbledore would have done.
No. I don't know. It's interesting. I like them both, though.
Yeah. But not only that, but
funny,
Tom changed.
Well, I was going to say, Ian McKellen turned down that role of replacing Richard Harris as Dumbledore.
Really?
Yes, and
I think that would have been too problematic.
There's an interview with him where Richard Harris was critical of Ian McKellen as an actor or something like that. For something, I don't know.
He wanted to do it to spite him?
No, he said, I couldn't possibly take over a role for a guy who, you know, didn't really approve of me as an actor or something like that.
Wow.
And I also wouldn't like that anyways, because he would have been the main wizard, and yeah, I mean, that just doesn't work.
You can't do that.
No, anyways.
I wouldn't have liked that.
Yeah.
Anyways, a lot of characters changed. Tom, he plays a normal guy in Sorcerer's Stone, and then when you get to Prisoner of Azkaban, he's like a hunchback weirdo.
Yes. It is kind of interesting. I don't know. What about a Flitwick? Is that his name, Flitwick?
Flitwick changed.
Yeah,
the look completely changed. Obviously, still played by Warwick Davis, but his look is completely different.
He goes from like a weird looking like creature to like a like a conductor with slicked back hair. It's fucking odd.
Yeah, and then also speaking of Warwick Davis, they changed the way Griphook looked.
Yeah, strange.
Yeah. So obviously, with different directors comes different. I guess that's the issue you get when you have different ideas and different artists coming in.
Yeah, but how could they? What would make them change the way Flitwick looked? Like, I don't get that.
I don't know. I mean, Maybe they just didn't like how he looked like an old,
yeah,
miserly
goblin. It's so odd. It's like the same character, but totally different looking. I don't know. It's weird.
It is really weird. But yeah, Philosopher's Stone came out November 16th, 2001.
Christ.
3 years ago.
Crazy.
That's crazy. But follow that up with a sequel. And spoiler alert, this is my least favorite one, Chamber of Secrets.
I think this is the weakest film. I think it's the weakest story.
When I say least favorite, it doesn't mean I think it's bad.
No.
It's just if I had to choose one I don't like as much as the others, it's this one.
It's just like kind of, the whole thing's kind of weak.
And like you said, it kind of follows the same
formula. Yeah, it's like when you watch this directly after the first one, it's like, okay, so now there's a different problem. Oh, Hogwarts is in danger again the next year.
I don't know. Yeah, actually, strange. now that you're explaining it like that, I've had these thoughts before. Where I'm like, oh, Hogwarts is in trouble again. Harry to the rescue.
Yeah,
but I feel like the threat in this one is way worse.
It definitely.
Like, Muggleborns are being petrified.
Yeah, this is where Draco drops the mudblood word, which is the Wizarding World equivalent of, you know, the N-word or something like that.
Pretty much, yeah. Or like,
you filthy mudblood.
It's funny too, because when he says that, you see Harry in the background. He reacts. He's like,
yeah.
And then he goes to Hagrid's hut. He's like, what does it mean?
yeah. So calm down. You don't even know what you're talking about.
Those are Nimbus 2001s. Where did you get those? A gift from Draco's father.
So we could do a whole episode of just fucking quotes and funny fucking weird moments and weird sayings.
Pretty much.
I'm half and half. My dad's a muggle. Mom's a witch.
Seamus doesn't get enough screen time. He does get a big scene later on down the line, though.
Yeah, I like when he gets pissed at Harry and the what is it, Goblet of Fire or one of those?
No, I think it's Order of the Phoenix.
Order of the Phoenix, yeah.
He's like, Daily Prophet saying a lot of things about you, Harry. Yeah.
What are you getting on at?
Yeah, he's like, I suppose you believe him just like your stupid mother.
Yeah, he says his stupid mother. I like that part.
Don't you dare call my mother stupid.
I actually think I rewound that and watch him call his mom stupid again. Shit's funny. Anyway,
he's like, sorry, Harry, you were right.
Yeah, okay, well, problem solved. Anyways, though, Chamber of Secrets. You know, I'm with you. I like all these movies. I think this is the weakest, though. It's just the weakest to me.
It just doesn't... I think maybe it's because I've seen it so many times and it's not introducing the story like Sorcerer's Stone.
This doesn't move the story anywhere.
There's big plot lines, like the fact that Harry can talk to snakes.
Yeah, but like...
Which meant nothing back then, because we didn't know.
Like at the climax, though, when everything's said and done, it's like, okay, where's the story moved that it didn't move to after the first one? You know what I mean?
I think this one is better in hindsight.
Yeah.
Because... Okay, who gives a shit about this diary? But then you find out later it's a Horcrux, so it's a big deal.
It's a big deal, yeah. I mean...
So I think I'm having an epiphany right now, but I feel like this one, maybe it's better in the hindsight of the entire story.
Yeah, don't get me wrong. I enjoy it. It's fucking... I always watch it. It's a great time. Moaning Myrtle is kind of disturbing. I don't really like that character.
Yeah.
She's kind of weird.
She's a sexual deviant.
Yeah.
We get introduced to Polyjuice Potion.
Polyjuice Potion, which ends up being a big thing with the whole entire plot as the story unfolds.
It does, and I think we need to just mention real quick how much of a good job it was by the guys who played Crabbe and Goyle to play
very good
Harry and Ron.
Very good.
And then the guy who plays Crabbe, he was... If you notice, he doesn't show up a little bit later in the series.
He got in trouble, like, didn't he?
Yeah, he was in prison.
Wow.
For London riot. He went to the London riots or something.
Jesus Christ.
And drug possession.
Yikes.
Yeah. And then Ginny. We get Ginny in this one. You want to talk about the relationship real quick?
Oh, I thought we were going to start judging the women of the Harry Potter franchise.
Oh, please. That's
or we could save that till the end when everyone's of mature age.
True. We'll When were they? Goblet of Fire?
I don't know.
We won't go down that.
Tread lightly.
We'll wait till the end. There's a lot to choose from.
Anyways, I never really... Ginny is kind of a boring character to me.
She is, yeah. And she's not in the books.
No. Even the first movie, she's like, good luck.
Yeah. And in this one, she's like, Mommy, have you seen my jumper? And yeah. She just looks at Harry.
Yeah. I don't know.
Obviously, she has she's a big deal to the story, but I feel like Harry had many other better choices.
Oh, my God.
But then again, of course, it's the way it is in the movie. She's, like, super smart and charismatic.
First
and
of all.
Beautiful in the book.
Harry's beta boy, okay? Most famous wizard.
I saw him kissing Cho Chang, that's for sure.
If I could took him long enough, the guy could have been that guy could have been tapping all the hot chicks at Hogwarts.
He had to wait for her honey to die to get in there.
What a pussy he is. How can you go fucking battle the Dark Lord but you can't make a move on a chick? Vagina McGiantstein.
I think that's the point, is that women weaken legs.
Harry should have been slanging that thing around Hogwarts.
He needed a Mickey around to help him. But we also get the introduction of a couple. Well, I guess one of them is not a big character because you don't really see Gilderoy Lockhart ever again.
No,
he gets locked up in a loony bin.
Another thing that's very formulaic with Harry Potter is the whole defense against the dark arts teacher. Like, cursed. Well, do they ever do a background check or anything with these people? I mean, come on.
Like, you're telling me nobody knew that Lupin was a werewolf?
Right. Nobody knew Lupin was a werewolf.
Nobody ever looked into Gilderoy Lockhart's accolades.
It's Barty Crouch Jr. with a polyjuice potion is Mad-Eye. I mean, come on.
Like, don't you think you have a vetting system to make sure people aren't on polyjuice potion?
Yeah, there should be, like, of all the shit that they could do, like, boy, if I lived in the wizarding world, I would just constantly brew polyjuice potion and get away with so much shit.
Yeah. You know? Well, I think probably the best example of the defense against dark arts teachers is Umbridge, because that movie's like a political thriller in some ways.
It is. You're right.
The way that she weasels her way in is just like so. That makes sense.
And can I just say, we're jumping way ahead, but boy, that lady should have won a fucking Oscar for that, because she is easy to fucking hate in that movie. I mean, she does a fantastic job. So punchable. She's fucking great.
Staunton.
She's great.
Yeah, she's. Obviously, the people don't really see these movies as having those kind of.
No.
Performances, yeah. But how the fuck did Alan Rickman not get anything for the last one?
That's bullshit, man.
I don't hear people, other than people in the circle that enjoy the movies, I don't hear anybody.
There
was
legit.
A performance I really thought was good was Snape.
Yeah, there's legit great acting in this series, for sure. Definitely. But anyways, Chamber of Secrets doesn't really, to me, move the needle a whole lot. It's a good time. Love it a lot. I really love that it's got the same vibe. It really just feels like an extension of the first movie. It's got that Chris Columbus vibe to it. The chamber showdown at the end with the basilisk is pretty fucking cool. I mean, I don't know.
That is awesome.
Yeah. The whole, like, Tom Riddle, though, you know, rearranging his name, like, bashing us over the head with, he's Voldemort.
Oh, he's good with anagrams.
Yeah, let me spell it out for you so the audience knows that it's me, the Dark Lord. Yeah, so, guys, kicks ass at Scrabble.
It goes on.
It does. Like,
because he fucking hates his muggle father. He hates the fact that he is half muggle.
Yeah, it's, I don't know. I agree with you. When you finally see the whole series, and then I think the second one becomes a little more important, but, you know, it is what it is.
Yeah, it's, like you said.
It's like, oh God, they could have cut shit out of that movie. Like,
it's 2:40.
Yeah. Oh, someone else is petrified.
Oh, no. Oh, Hermione, now I give a shit.
Mrs. Norse. Oh,
kill ya.
There's another guy that's
fucking great.
There's another guy that's great, by the way.
Man, oh yeah,
so good.
What is his name? Because he's good.
He's fucking awesome.
And he's good in
Game of Thrones.
Game of Thrones.
Yeah.
Where is that young man's name?
He's
David
great.
Bradley.
Yeah, he's really good.
And he's a squib.
Wow.
He's the exact embodiment of somebody that thinks they're better than everybody else,
yeah.
And they're just a fucking bum. He's just a straight up bum.
I'll kill ya.
We also get an introduction to Dobby.
Dobby, yes, Dobby. Can I say
we'll
something?
Talk.
The fuck? I noticed this the last time I watched it. Was Lucius gonna kill Harry at the end of the movie?
Yes. He was.
Holy shit. I never noticed that before. He's fucking about to drop the death curse or the killing curse on him, man. I'm like, what
at the time,
fuck?
At the time, we didn't know what the death curse was.
We don't know what that means.
I thought he was
weird.
I thought he was clearing his throat. Yeah.
He's like,
he definitely says Avada.
Holy shit. I never really picked up on that. Or if I did, I don't know. But
Harry should have been.
I'm like, holy fuck. He was going to kill him. That story could have ended right there.
Well, once again, Jason Isaacs as Lucius is just incredible.
Oh, my God.
Straight scumbag.
So good.
Just think of his introduction.
Yeah, holy shit.
I just think of his introduction at the bookstore.
Oh, man. So good.
And just, well.
Yeah.
Weasley Senior.
So good.
Red hair, vacant expression.
Man, so good.
He must be a Weasley.
I think the house elf system's a little flawed, though. You should actually sneak in him a sock to free your house elf. That's bullshit. It should be more prominent than that. You have to, like, give him a shirt or something.
Okay, so you're pro elf slavery.
Yes, I think that's I think that's a bullshit way to free him. It's too easy.
But he gave it to him.
Yeah, it's like a sock. Get real.
Well, I mean, these were set in the 90s. I don't think we knew what...
That's true. That's true.
I don't know. I'm just... Let me just make it clear that I am not pro goblin slavery or house elf slavery.
Shit, I'd own a house elf if I could. Not that fucking creepy one, though, that's...
Creature?
He's spooky.
Toby Jones as Dobby, too.
Toby Jones.
Pretty good. Fuck. We'll get to it, but... Dobby is just like,
yeah. Well, we got to move on, or we'll be here forever. So
yeah. Well, we're getting to where things change.
The next one is, I bet you if you ask 100 people that love Harry Potter, which is their favorite movie, I bet you like 60 of them at least would say Part 3. To me, I used to not like it at all. I mean, mm-hmm. I did. I like them all. You know, I didn't dislike it, but I'm just. That time turner thing and the end,
and they never talk about it again.
Yeah, I don't know. It's just, I don't know. I like it though. Like you said, I think it was just the change and everything. Like, I know they get older, that comes with the territory, but everything's different. Hagrid has like a professor role, and they fucking move his hut. It's like in a different place. It just throws me off. You know, I like the old Hagrid house.
The geography of Hogwarts and everything changes. Like the Whomping Willow is
it's so weird.
Not next to the school like it was.
Yeah.
Which I guess that makes sense, because why would you put it next to a school where it could kill children?
I hate to say it, but it's like from 3 until the end, it's like they took all the light and like the brightness out of like the castle, and it's just like dark and dreary, you know?
I love it.
It's just the way it feels. Yeah. It's like very different. It's very different.
I can't believe this movie came out in 2004.
Jesus, man. Some really badass parts. I love the shit with the Dementors. Awesome.
Introduction to the Dementors with that little quiet music playing in the
back. Very
That's
cool.
Horrifying.
Because I remember reading that as a kid, and the part when they come on the train is like, whoa, you know, to see that brought to life was really cool and very well done.
What's your favorite game?
What do you mean game?
Out of the Harry Potter games.
Oh, like the video games?
Yeah.
The only one I played was the Sorcerer's Stone.
Really?
For PlayStation 1, yeah.
The Prisoner of Azkaban is the one that I remember the most playing.
I mean, I liked the one that I played, and I'll tell you what, I'm gonna buy that new one. Fucking looks awesome.
Yeah.
But
we'll see how it goes. But obviously the plot throughout this one is Sirius Black. Who is this guy? Maybe one of Gary Oldman's best performances.
It's good. Yeah, Gary Oldman is just always good, you know? Like, the guy's underrated.
I think the whole showdown in the Shrieking Shack between everybody is awesome.
You know, I appreciate that a little bit. Every time I watch it, I appreciate that a little bit more. That's definitely the, you know, the build-up. That fucker that plays, what's his name? The rat? Who's the guy? What's is that
Timothy Spall?
Yeah, what's his name? What's his, like, nickname?
Is Peter Pettigrew.
Oh, Peter Pettigrew.
Oh, he's Padfoot.
Padfoot, yeah. Creepy-looking fucking buck-tooth idiot.
Yeah.
Good casting, I guess.
I was thinking about it watching it the other day. So Ron went through most of his life with a man on his lap.
That's right. He was stroking a man.
Watching him jerk off all the time.
That's funny. Yeah, you're right. Boy, he fucking saw all sorts of shit.
He did.
Man.
And he was on his lap on the Hogwarts Express.
Yeah, that's funny, though, because, like, I remember reading that book, and, like, when you find out that it's his rat the whole time, like, that was, like, out of nowhere. You're like, oh, shit. You know? So it's cool.
And he's got to be, like, top five scummiest people in the whole series.
Oh, he's every time he shows up, he's just, like, doing some shady shit, or you just want to knock him out, you know?
But, like, what a twist to think this whole time that yeah. Sirius Black is the one that sold him out. Nope, no. It's this guy named Peter Pettigrew.
Yeah.
He's a rat that Ron owned this whole time.
Yeah. I don't know. It's not my favorite, just because I feel like there's... every one of those movies to me has, like, a big moment, you know? That one, I guess, would be the confrontation in the Shrieking Shack, but I don't know.
And the fact that Harry attacks Snape...
Somebody
else who has been looking out for him the whole time.
That is true. The whole thing with Snape is pretty interesting. I still kind of, I don't know, every time I watch it, I'm like, okay, I guess now it kind of makes more sense, I guess, but I don't know.
I think that's got to be my favorite character in the whole series.
Severus. Alan Dickman.
Who wants to watch me take off Snape's trousers?
Oh, shit. Fucking so
plot twist. James Potter's a dickhead.
Oh, man.
Plus, we get the introduction of Remus Lupin and Trelawney, who is not as circumstantial as David Doolis is.
She sucks. I'm glad she got fucking kicked out in part five. What do you think of the werewolf transformation?
I mean, it looks pretty good.
It's not bad.
Do you not like it?
It's just very CGI heavy.
Mm, yeah. They can't all be American Werewolf.
No, I wanted to see some practical transitions.
Yeah. I assume the whole thing is CGI.
It's pretty CG. It's good, though. I like the movie.
Yeah, it's just like...
It's a shift in tone, you know? I mean, it is.
It is a shift in tone. And I don't really have much more to say about it, because it's... I think it kind of gets lost.
When did
for me now.
Hermione start getting hot? This movie? Part four.
Two.
One.
Definitely. 1 year old.
She started to come into her womanhood a little bit in Prisoner of Azkaban.
Definitely three, but I think four is like when I really like...
Yeah, oh, she's in that dress.
Oh my God. Yeah, that whole thing was...
You're sick. She was like 14 in that, or 15. That's gross.
Yeah, and I was like 13.
Well, you're 30 now, so that's gross.
Statute of limitations.
Anyways, Prisoner of I still don't understand why it's everyone's favorite. I don't get it.
I think it's a change in tone.
I don't understand.
I think it, at the time, was the most circumstantial.
Yeah. I don't know. When did we first get a shot of Azkaban? Is it in this movie when they take Dumbledore? Is this when he goes to Azkaban?
No.
Or Hagrid. Hagrid, I mean.
Hagrid goes to Azkaban in Chamber of Secrets.
Okay. Because
he comes back at the... Okay, that is the maybe the best part of Chamber of Secrets.
Talk about
when
the
comes
endings.
Back.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a good ending. Yeah.
Is when he comes back and he's like, sorry, I'm late.
Yeah, everyone hugs him. That shit gives him a little lump in my throat.
There's no Hogwarts without you, Hagrid.
Oh, man. Even the first one. I love the ending of the first one, too. I'm not
it's
going home.
It's kind of bullshit.
Not really.
Oh, my God.
You're new
with us.
Dude, Dumbledore is shady as fuck for that.
The point shaving?
Oh, I would have been so pissed. God.
But why are the other houses applauding? Why do they care that
Slytherin.
Do they just hate Slytherin?
We hate Slytherin.
You're probably a Slytherin.
Probably. I would tell him to put me in that house, the fucking stupid hat.
I'm a Hufflepuff.
Yeah, fucking whack shit. Nobody cares about Ravenclaw or Hufflepuff. If you're not in Slytherin or Gryffindor, get fucked.
You're just like everybody else, a loser.
Not Slytherin. Not Slytherin. Not Slytherin, eh?
Are you sure?
Okay, so anyways. Part four.
Part four.
Goblet of Fire. The
tone changed in three, but this is where everything gets dark.
The last 30 minutes of Goblet of Fire, I think, is my favorite sequence of events in the series. Like, my favorite.
From where? From when they go into the maze?
Well, when he takes the port key, when they touch the cup and the port key. That, because that's really where shit changes big time with the series.
That is the turning point.
And it's fun, dude, that shit is fucking dark. Like, there's some weird, like, blood magic and shit. Blood.
Yeah.
And like the bone of his dead father.
Bone of the father.
Like, that shit is fucking.
Blood of the enemy and then flesh of the servant.
That's some dark shit, man.
That is dark stuff. And we get Ralph Fiennes.
Yeah.
Voldemort.
Before,
and I think he's fucking awesome.
He's great. Before we get to that, I mean, a lot of crazy shit in this. The Quidditch World Cup. What do you think about that?
I think it's awesome, and I think it expands the world. I think you get to learn about these other schools that are out there. It's not just Hogwarts.
So is, like, Voldemort, like, does everyone know who he is? Like, does the school where fucking Victor Krum goes to, do they know who Voldemort is? You know what I'm saying?
I think he's just an enemy to magic kind in general. Just anybody magic.
I always wonder, like, do the people, and like, does Victor Krum know who fucking Harry Potter is? You know, like, have they heard, you know what I mean? Like, those other schools.
That's a good question.
Like, or is that just,
I don't know.
You know what I mean? I don't know. The Quidditch World Cup thing is pretty breathtaking. Even, like, it's cool.
Yeah, when Fleur walks down the aisle, yeah, it's pretty breathtaking.
Yes. Mm.
Our hot bitches from Beauxbatons.
Yeah, I don't know about some of those intros, like when the weird effect on the sticks, you know, when the, you know what I'm talking about, the motion blur. why do they do that? What do I have to see that?
Like, blowing the fire out of the wands is cool, but
yeah.
And then Victor Krum is so fucking cool that he walks with what's his name? Who's the headmaster of the school?
Oh, what is his
Karkaroff.
Name?
Karkaroff. Karkaroff.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Thanks. Karkaroff. Yeah, he's so fucking cool. And how is he? Is he like a on the youth Quidditch team? Because he's still in school. How is he playing in the Quidditch World Cup?
Dude, they talk about him like he's the Michael Jordan of Quidditch. So why the fuck is
but
he
he's
going
still
to school?
In school. Why didn't he skip school like LeBron?
There's some of the shit you have to just suspend your disbelief a little bit, I guess.
Oh, well, that scene at the Quidditch World Cup where Death Eaters first show up.
Yeah.
That is so fucking sick.
That's
and
awesome.
Dark. And
this
they're
really
chanting the whole time.
Yeah. This movie's dark. It's a dark movie.
Tonally and visually.
Really changes everything. I mean, it really
well,
does.
Well, it was the first one to get a PG-13 certificate in the U.S. And 12A in the U.K., which I assume is pretty much the same thing.
We got Robert Pattinson and Cedric Diggory.
Yes. What do you think of him in this?
I think he's good. I think he's fine. I mean, it's
fine. I think anybody could have played it.
I agree.
When he dies, holy shit.
Yeah, the one part of the the Triwizard, what are they, Triwizard
tournament,
what do they call them, the events or the quests or whatever,
the events
I think the one with the dragons really cool. The shit where they go under the water with the mermaids, you
Don't like
know.
that one as much.
You know, this before I watched this the other day, like this was like my second favorite. Like I had Goblet of Fire very high.
I think this is the one that's most different from the book, and I think because of that, most people don't like this one as
Yeah,
much.
you can tell they're trying to fit a lot into a little time that they had, but
Yeah, it's
yeah, I don't
not
know.
my favorite.
No. The last 30 minutes they'll make up for some of the shortcomings, I think, because
Definitely.
this is where we finally
And
see the Dark Lord. Oh my God.
he's very different than what he was.
That's fucking awesome, dude. When you finally get that shot of him like fully put together again. Huh.
He like opens his eyes and they're snake eyes
Oh my
for a
God.
moment. And
Fucking
he's
awesome.
so fucking dark,
Dude.
and his delivery,
Oh man.
everything he. Oh,
He's
Harry!
oh dude. So good. Fuck, dude. Like, seriously, one of could be my favorite moment of the series when he's brought back to life, I guess. Wow. Epic shit.
I don't know if anybody else could have played it the same way.
No, and this is where we are introduced to the killing curse, really. At the beginning of the film, the
Yeah.
caretaker or whatever in the house next door, the muggle, and then
Yeah.
Cedric gets
But
it.
then you see it,
Yeah.
but you don't know about it until later on in the movie when Moody starts talking about
Right,
him.
right. And then Cedric gets it, which is like the first kind of shocking.
Immediately,
Yeah.
immediately. There's
Yeah.
no build up. They get there and then he's just like, it's almost like, what the fuck just happened?
Yeah, it's when you're watching that, it's like, whoa. Okay, so now they're gonna start killing people off. This
So
is some,
now things are getting real.
yeah, this is some dark shit, and this is really where it, part three was heading in that direction, but like part four is fucking dark in the last half hour for sure.
There's a few moments in the series where I dread watching them just because
Yeah.
they're it's when they go into the maze, like that whole thing, because I
Yeah.
know what's coming.
Yeah.
And the Dobby thing, I that one's really rough for me.
Yeah.
I hate that part so
Yeah.
much.
It's like,
Of all the people,
yeah, and
that's the
like, you don't
one.
really have an emotional attachment to Cedric after one movie, but like, just seeing like a student dying like that, like being murdered, is like, whoa, holy shit.
Just so unceremoniously, too.
Yeah. I will say it wouldn't be much of a series if this didn't go on, but man, dude, there were so many chances for Harry to be killed. Like, wow. Holy
That's what
shit.
I was gonna bring up earlier. Like, he is maybe one of the luckiest people
Yeah, they dicked
that
around with it
there
way too
is.
long. Like, just end him already.
Yeah.
But
Well.
that part when their wands connect in the fourth for the first time, and you can see the like.
And then
Whoa.
the ghosts of the people that were killed with the wand,
Shit.
including his parents,
What's he say?
including the
Bring my body back to my father.
bring my body back.
Yeah.
Bring my body back to my father.
Oh, dude.
And then when he does, and a great minute-long performance by whoever played his dad.
Yeah, really, really good.
My
That's my boy. What's the blonde chick's name? Fleur?
Fleur.
Fleur. God, Harry should have been fucking sticking his wand all up in that.
That's gross. That's disgusting. But yeah, we get more of the Polyjuice potion because we find out that Moody is been Barty Crouch Jr. the whole time.
This also bothers me too. Like we talked about, it's like, oh my God, again. Oh, something sketchy going on.
The whole time he could have taken out Harry.
Yeah, that's true. No, instead he teaches about all the killing curses.
But I guess at this point, Voldemort knows that he's part of him, like he's a Horcrux, so he can't really.
I
He has
get
to be the one to kill him.
there's like a lot
That's
of
why he
shit.
wants him to bring him to the graveyard.
Yeah, that's true. I don't know. It gets a little like, I don't want to say convoluted, but shit starts to hit the fan a little bit at the end of this film, and it's
It's
fucking
like a
on.
really down tone at
It
the end. There's no
is.
happiness
There,
to it.
it's.
They have the little Dumbledore gives a little speech about Cedric. He was fierce.
Fierce
friend.
Has there ever been any other series of films in history that takes 8 movies to build up to like a fight? Because that's what's going on in this. It takes 8 films to build up to a confrontation. It really does, you know?
Well, the confrontation. Yeah. I mean, they're technically fighting.
Yeah, but I mean, it's like, you know, when you get to the last part of the last movie, it's like, holy shit, this is what it's been building up for. Like, there's a lot of content building up towards the end game, you know? Anyways.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's pretty much all we can say about this one. Not my favorite, but
it's good. They're all good.
Story along.
Yeah, they're
it
all
introduces
good.
Important
See,
key moments.
That's my thing. Like, this one progresses the story at the end, where like Chamber of Secrets is like, okay, you know what I mean? So
yeah, we know Tom Riddle is
right.
Voldemort, but why do we give a shit who he was before?
Right. So, you know, it is what it is.
But this is where it's not this one, it's the next one where we find out more about where he came from. This one, without giving too much away, is high on my list. Order of the Phoenix.
Mine too. It's fucking awesome.
Not only does the tone change, it gets way darker. You get a different director who obviously has a style that he's used since.
Yeah. Then. Do you like how they let the same person finish out the series, directing wise?
I personally do, because I love his vision for
it. Yeah. No, I
think
agree.
Maybe when they went on to the Fantastic Beasts movies, they should have done something different.
Yeah, no, I agree. I'm glad they gave it to somebody to kind of...
Whoa!
Wow. Highest quality special effects here, folks.
It looks like the troll in the dungeon.
This is probably a mistake to use backgrounds, but whatever. Anyways.
I think it's awesome. It's better than seeing my fucking mirror.
Anyways, it's... Yeah. What were we talking about?
The tone. Same director.
Yeah, no, because I think those last movies are all kind of... It needed to be one person, you know? Or it would have been all over the place.
It needed to be cohesive.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. What do you think about Luna?
Loony Lovegood?
Yeah.
She's definitely attractive. I'll say that. I don't know if I could be around her for very long.
No, she doesn't do much for me. Stupid
dumb
character.
Her dad's a weirdo.
Oh, yeah, he is.
She's the fucking quirky character of it. One that everybody relates to.
Yeah, I'm Luna.
She's so quirky.
Quirky?
And I don't dislike her or her character. Like, obviously, there's going to be weirdos in Hogwarts, but she's definitely the one for, like, the...
Yeah.
I'm so different than everybody else. I'm quirky. I relate to Luna. Yeah.
She's the autistic character.
So is her dad.
So the whole plot of this one is, you know, shit's hit the fan in part 4. They're assembling a student army to take on the Dark Lord.
While at the same time, the political people, the government of the magic world, is trying to silence that, trying to hide that he's back. And this is probably, like we said earlier, the political thriller of Harry Potter films.
Yeah, it's a lot of that. Oh, yeah, well, we got to talk about... Dude, the beginning of this movie with Dudley, like, he's like some, what the fuck is he wearing?
Gangster.
Like, yeah, like, I don't like
Big
that.
D.
I don't like this. I don't like this part of the film at all. I don't like, no.
But why? Maybe that's how he was.
Maybe, but it's just strange. I don't like seeing all that in the
Muggle. He's also supposed to be a kid in this, too.
Yeah, it's just odd. But that's the whole plot of the movie, because, like, Harry casts a fucking Patronus or whatever, and...
Yeah, in the Muggle world.
I still don't understand the rules about doing magic outside of school, but whatever.
Can't do it. Unless you do it to blow up your aunt.
Yeah. Oh, that's right. Trunchbull.
Yeah.
Would you fuck her for a chance to own...
Yes, just don't even say anything else.
If you
else.
Could own the screen-used Elder Wand prop... Would you bang Pam Ferris?
Yeah, sure, yeah.
Okay. I would
bang her just for the opportunity to look at it.
Okay.
I'd bang her for the opportunity to bang Pam Ferris.
Okay. Fair enough. Just not
Shea Ferris.
Just not in her trenchful attire. That's a little too much.
Yeah, I just want to get in her trench.
Gross. Anyways, go ahead. Discuss this.
Well,
we're going to be on this forever if we go at this pace.
Yeah, so essentially what happens is Harry uses a Patronus in the Muggle world, and he's on trial. It's a quick trial, that's for sure.
It is, and because he's Harry Potter, well, he's exempt from everything.
Well, because he's Harry Potter, the Ministry of Magic wants to make an example of him.
Yeah.
Especially because he's got information and he's saying all this stuff about Voldemort.
I have another problem. Like,
we're not here for problems.
Shouldn't the Ministry of Magic be like super hard to infiltrate? And shouldn't it take more than just a Polyjuice potion to walk through the fucking front door and
end up in somebody's... It seems like their security measures are... Yeah. It's like what Harry says in part two. It seems that despite your exhaustive security measures...
That's true. Yeah, there's... They always manage to just kind of end up right where they need to be without much of a problem. Anyways, go on.
Yeah, and they're using Dementors.
Yeah.
To, like, torture people.
Yeah. Kind of weird.
Starting to get real weird. But anyway, Dumbledore comes to take care of that whole situation. He does it real fast. And then you find out about something called the Order of the Phoenix, which is a secret organization founded by Dumbledore. With a bunch of magical good people.
Yes.
And Harry wants to join up.
Yes.
Because he wants to fight Voldemort. And yes. They're like, no, you're too young. You can't do that.
Who's in the order? Molly Weasley, Sirius Black.
Remus. Tonks. Who is the black guy?
Oh, yeah. Who is that black guy?
He is... I'll find out real quick. Because he's like the main one I think of. Because he's always at, like, the front of the group.
Yeah, he just, like, suddenly appeared in that movie and then was there the rest of the way. Anyways, though.
Kingsley Shacklebolt.
Okay.
Yeah, George Harris. Sin. Oh, sorry, I talk about the Beatles and you're like...
Yeah, as soon as you mention a Beatle name. Whoa.
But I think this is the one that starts to take on... at least the beginnings of the mature themes
throughout
the rest of the series.
This movie, much like the predecessor, it's, to me, when I think of this movie, I think of the end. I think of the climax, the last half hour, I guess, you know?
Fucking God.
It's so good, you know?
Well.
Basically, Harry's training these fellow students in the, the Room of Requirement? Is that what it is?
Yeah, the Room of Requirement. Okay. They make up Dumbledore's army.
Yeah, so they're like, he's trying to teach these fucking bum-ass kids how to get on his level and do some...
Because they're pretty much, like, suppressing the students from learning anything useful.
Yes. Umbridge. Wow, what a bitch.
Oh, what a performance.
What a performance.
But we also learn... I don't know if we learn this in the movie, but the connection between Harry and Voldemort, how they can see into each other's minds.
Oh, yeah.
Because of that, Snape starts teaching Harry occlumency. Which is the way to, like, block him out.
Right.
And this is when we first find out about Harry's dad being a dick.
That's true. Yes.
Because he jumps into Snape's mind and sees him getting bullied.
Bullied the fuck out of him.
Let's see if I can take off Snape's trousers. All right. All right. Gay. But,
Well, the whole thing of this movie is Harry has saw Voldemort at the end of Goblet of Fire, but nobody else was there except Cedric, who fucking died. So nobody believes Harry. You know, they're thinking, shut the fuck up. You know, he's not bad.
What do they think killed Cedric?
Well, they're in insane denial about Voldemort, you know, throughout the entire series, basically. So they wanted nothing to do with that. Nobody believes him.
I remember reading this book. Like, I remember specifically finding out when Sirius died. What the fuck?
Oh, my God.
But the part that I don't really understand, and maybe you can make sense of it,
I
is
probably can't,
the fact
but I'll try. Yeah, full of, I don't even know what those are. Crystal balls.
They're crystal balls. They're, fuck, what's the word? I just had it. Oh, my God. I'm sorry. They're, They're prophecies. Like, they're prophecies in Snow Globe.
Okay.
Just like, and if you destroy it, like, the prophecy's broken. Like,
I really don't understand. I don't know what that means.
I don't understand the prophecies. Like, a prophecy is something that's more.
Yeah. I just think it's cool when they're in there fucking running around and, you know, doing spells and shit and all those glass balls are breaking.
Mm-hmm. Breaking balls. But then they get to the,
Is it in part 4 or is it the beginning of part 5 when it cuts to Azkaban and we see like Bellatrix and all of them escaping?
It's this one.
Okay, that's a cool scene.
It is a cool scene.
That's a cool shot because like, throughout the series, like Azkaban, that's like the place you don't want to fucking go, you know?
Yeah.
And the way they make it look, like in the middle of the water, in the middle of the ocean, it looks like
dreadful,
lifeless, you know? Mm-hmm. I love that shot though, like when the fucking wall crumbles and she comes kind of, you know, yeah, fucking awesome. She's really good, by the way.
Yeah, let me ask you this.
Well, Bellatrix. Fuck her in the worst way.
Yeah, I was like, you down?
Oh my God, yes. Even with those crusty teeth.
Oh, I would let her stick her phoenix, yeah. Phoenix dragon heartstring wand up my butt.
Yep, I don't care how smelly she is in Azkaban.
I'd like to get in her Azkaban. But anyway, we get to this once again. This last 30-40 minutes,
yes,
are fucking incredible.
They are
some of my favorite in the whole series.
Yep,
because you have a spell battle with the Order, with the Death Eaters, with Sirius.
Bites the bullet.
It fucking sucks.
Yes, and then that shot of Danny Radcliffe screaming with the audio muted.
Silently.
Very good.
And he just floats away.
Yes.
It's so subtle, but when Gary Oldman gets hit with the spell, and he does like that.
Yeah.
He does like that.
Oh.
Like he feels it like, oh, there's just something so,
yeah.
Something about that little subtlety and that really sells it, and I love that.
I love when Bellatrix runs away screaming that she killed him too. That's some great psychological shit.
Mm-hmm.
And
she's just a fucking troll.
Yeah, and Harry had a point where if he wanted to, he could have hit her with the spell, but Harry wouldn't do that because he's a pussy.
Well, and she's looking up at him like, please spare me.
He should have just whipped it out.
His dick.
I know that goes against the whole character and whatever. Like, fuck, it would have been cool if he casted that one time, though.
Yeah, would have been better than the way she actually dies.
Yeah, like, fuck. I was just when I was watching it the other day, I'm like, fuck, I wish he would have killed her, man. That would have been awesome.
But probably my favorite part of the whole movie is the duel between Dumbledore and Voldemort.
So awesome.
And with these David Yates ones, it starts to introduce a lot more handycam, a lot less of a pivoted camera angle.
Right.
There's a lot more Steadicam. It feels very, almost like documentary style in a way. And the battle, there's no music, which I love. And it's just a fierce battle between two masters.
And it's at that point when you realize the original Dumbledore could have never pulled that off. Richard Harris, the actor.
Pulled it off.
It's kind of I don't know.
I like the part throughout the fight, though, where Dumbledore keeps pushing Harry back to get away.
Because
he keeps wanting to get involved. And then
when Dumby conjures up that water, fucking awesome.
And then when Voldemort takes everything in and just and all the glass breaks and falls out.
See, and that's the point where then the staff from the ministry,
Cornelius Fudge.
Yeah, they see that, okay, he's back, finally. No more denial. They know he's back. So it's a great movie. That's the thing about this series. Every one of these movies is good. Like, there's not any one particular that's like, oh, this movie's fucking awful, you know? Like,
right.
Man, they're all good in their own way, you know?
And I feel like all these later ones have circumstance.
Yeah.
There's something that happens.
Yeah.
In all of them. But moving on to Half-Blood Prince. I don't think a lot of people like this, but it's
crazy. Y'all are crazy if you don't like this. I think it's people that read the book that don't care for the movie.
Maybe, and I think a lot of people see this one as like the young adult version because there's a lot of like relationship stuff going on in this.
Okay.
Like the Lavender Brown Ron thing.
Okay.
Hermione and like.
That's
her
true.
And Ginny and Dean, all this. There's like high school drama shit going on.
There is, but if you're in school.
Which I don't care.
Yeah, I mean, that shit happens, you know? I don't know. I never read these final few books, so I don't have anything to base them off of. I just like the movies, you know?
Mm-hmm. But everything gets darker. The Death Eaters kidnap Mr. Ollivander.
Yeah. This is where the story really kind of... There's a lot of shit you have to pay attention to, you know?
I didn't realize that for the longest time.
No, I mean, you could get lost if you're not paying attention, especially at the end of the movie. You know, there's a lot of shit that... The plot, the end game is definitely starting to take form here, for sure.
Yeah, definitely true. That's why he does it.
Oh, okay. Yeah, and the whole beginning of the movie is where Snape's taking the oath or whatever.
Vow.
Yeah, the vow.
Yeah, which, Narcissa?
Oh, my God. There's some hot chicks in these movies, man.
There are. Fuck. Can we rate them now?
Yeah, Maggie Smith, number one.
Number one. Miriam Margulies.
Who's that?
Professor Sprout.
Oh, yeah. She's a sprout, all right. Anyways, keep going. We're going to be here all day.
But this is where we meet a character who, at this point, probably know nothing about, but Horace Slughorn is...
Yes.
He is kind of a major character to the whole thing.
He is.
Well, I guess they're trying to get him to come and be the potions professor, but I think the end game, because Dumbledore is, he's playing puppeteer the whole time.
He is.
And what he's trying to do is he's trying to get Harry and Slughorn to be close so that Slughorn will reveal some secrets.
The end game plot of Harry Potter gets a little complex. It really does. If you're not if you're not paying attention, like, oh, you know, wizards, whatever, like, there's a lot going on. And honestly, every time I watch these, I kind of pick up on some other things that maybe I kind of didn't, you know, I missed maybe. So, yeah, there's a lot going on. At this point in the series, you have to start paying attention for sure.
You'll miss a lot.
Yeah.
They're not slow, but there's times where everything just comes at you real quick.
Yeah.
There's always information being thrown at you. But yeah, there's a lot of stuff that happens in this. There's Ron making the Quidditch team. Everybody's in love with everybody.
Right.
But essentially the big moments are Harry trying to find out what Slughorn told Voldemort about Horcruxes.
Yes. This is when the Horcrux thing starts to come into play.
Was confused about for a long time.
Yeah, really from here until the end. That's the big plot. And there's, you know what, I always remember that when this book came out, I remember there's a guy uploaded a video on YouTube where they drove around to midnight releases yelling out spoilers.
Oh my God.
I just vividly remember they drove past Barnes & Noble, the guy yells out the window, "Snape kills Dumbledore!" And then you hear this chick in the background go, "No!" Oh, I fucking love it.
That's such a fucked up thing to do.
It is, like, oh my God, but yeah.
But essentially what happens is Slughorn has... He's given Dumbledore a memory that's not true.
Yeah.
Where he basically tells Tom Riddle, you know, get out of here. I'm not telling you anything about this.
Yeah.
And then Harry's able to convince him to tell him the truth. He told him.
Okay, this is like the movie where we see the shots of Dumbledore, like, going to the orphanage and talking to... Okay. So they really... Mm-hmm. You start to get the whole kind of picture of Voldemort. Here.
Yeah, and where he came from.
Yeah, and you know, a lot of times when movies
when he becomes
do that,
evil.
When movies do that, it doesn't always work. But I think that works well. Like,
I think it does.
Yeah, I was just thinking that when I watched them a week ago. You know, I'm like, okay, this, you know, it's not cheesy. It seems like important to the story. So
it's essential.
Yeah,
like, how did he? What are these? And how did he create them?
Yeah, definitely.
And how much of the what's happening is because of Slughorn,
right,
and the knowledge he gave to him, which I'm sure he could have, like, when they eventually got internet in the wizarding world, he could have looked up what to do.
Yeah.
But Yeah, this is when Ginny and Harry finally hook up too.
Finally, Harry's doing something with his fame.
Jesus. Yeah, finally.
What a shame.
Gee, you can have anybody in the world, and you go after Cho and Ginny.
That's true. Shit, I was
your best friend's sister.
Yeah, what the fuck? That's a good point. Man,
it's disturbing. But this is when we find out.
Horcrux. This is what you were saying earlier. Yeah, suddenly Chamber of Secrets becomes a little more meaningful. I like that, by the way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because if they didn't call back to that, you know, whatever.
But then, once again, we get like a big climax scene where Harry and Dumbledore go to that cave.
I swear, that seems like some Lord of the Rings shit. Doesn't it?
It
seems out of place. Yeah, that's what I was thinking. It seems like something from fucking Lord of the Rings. I don't know.
Because these things are called Inferi.
Yeah.
Which are essentially their, like, dead bodies that have been bewitched and controlled, yeah. Which is not something...
It's cool. I like it.
Yeah, the scene is great when he's, like, flicking the fire wand around.
Again, I was just, like, imagining Richard Harris doing that.
wouldn't have happened.
And that fucking shit that they're drinking, that potion that he's drinking out of the little chalice thing or whatever.
It looks good.
It does. It looks like
the clear Gatorade.
It looks very refreshing.
Yeah. For some reason, I think of it as like, it looks clear, but it has a grape flavor to it.
Damn. I've been slurping that right up.
I don't know why.
Oh, shit.
But after this happens, they go back to the school, and this is, I mean, things.
Biggest part of most shocking part of the series up until this point, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
And from Harry's perspective, he still doesn't know what's going on, so
yeah, he's been left out of the loop.
He sees it as Snape murdering Dumbledore, which is what happens. I mean, boy, when you watch that for the first time, Snape kills him, pretty fucking awesome, honestly.
Pretty fucking awesome,
man. Oh man.
If he fell that far, though, I feel like he'd be splat.
Probably, yes. Again, I guess you're not supposed to. Yeah, his body was in a nice shape, you know, considering he fucking fell.
There
off
was
the
no
top
blood.
Fell off the top of a castle, but man, it's cool. And then I love how they like are run, you know, Bellatrix, and they're running through the Great Hall, kicking shit, and then they fucking burn down Hagrid's house. And what the fuck, dude? Shit's fucking badass.
Well, one thing we didn't talk about is when they're in the potions class, Harry comes across a book.
Yes.
Signed by belonging to the Half-Blood Prince.
Yes.
Who, obviously, we don't know this whole time. It helps him in a lot of ways. He learns a new spell, Sectum Sempra, which essentially lacerates people.
Oh, yeah. Cast that on Draco. God damn, he would have killed him if there was nobody there to save him.
He would have. He would have been dead. If the one person who created the spell wasn't there, he would have been dead. I think it's awesome because he doesn't know what he's just like a lost person.
Yeah.
He's just doing things. He doesn't know what he's doing.
From his,
the power he has.
At this point, he doesn't know what's going on. He's just going from this fucking book that he read. But it's very intricate, though, because then you think from Snape's point of view, when he sees that he's cast that spell, you know, he has to know at that point. Yeah. I mean, it's fucking cool. There's a lot of layers to it, you know? And then when they have the confrontation outside of, you know, Hagrid's burning house, and he's like, you know, you dare use my spells against me or something. Like, fucking hell, dude.
Yes.
Oh, my God. I'm
the Half-Blood Prince.
Oh, shit.
Oh, my God.
This shit's
so
awesome.
You're a Half-Blood, too?
God damn, that shit's fucking awesome, dude. I love it.
Then we get, once again, just like Goblet of Fire, it's a really fucking sad.
It is. These ending. Movies are progressively just more, like, dark. They really are.
And
I can think when I'm watching some of these dark ones is, like, in my head, I'm thinking, holy fuck, this is a long ways away from that first movie, you know?
Very much so.
I mean, really.
To skip school next year to go look for the Horcruxes.
Let's go find the Horcruxes.
And then we get to, I'm curious your thoughts on Deathly Hallows Part 1.
This one's
growing on me a lot.
I like it. I think it's the slowest moving of the films.
Definitely slow.
Would
you have preferred it a 4-hour movie?
Yeah, they had to do that. So I understand, you know, I mean, I watch them.
5-hour movie.
Yeah, maybe. Like I understand why they broke it up. You know, they had to. There's so much there. It's a little slow for me. I like it though. It's good. It's really good.
My one gripe I'll say is that I feel like you spend 6 movies and you don't really know anything about Horcruxes, and then
it seems rushed.
2 movies, yeah. They find the rest of them.
Yeah, it's like we're gonna set out to the land to find the Horcruxes, but they don't really struggle all that much, you know.
Yeah, like even in part 2,
yeah,
it's like there's something in the castle.
Yeah,
we don't know what it is or where it is.
Oh, you mean they've been trying to find the entrance to the Chamber of Secrets for 3,000 years? Well, I'm sure we'll be able to find it.
It's like, with that being said, though, this is definitely the quietest, definitely the slowest.
Slowest.
It's a lot of walking. It's a road movie.
It is a road movie.
It's like Lord of the Rings.
You get a nice vision of Emma Watson without a shirt on.
Yeah.
You don't really see anything, but, you know, you can imagine.
Yeah.
That's what I remember from
my
film.
Whole life.
That's what I remember from the film.
I've thought of it my whole life.
Yep. I'd rather watch The Bling Ring, but that's okay.
Ugh.
No, but it's very good. Trying to destroy the Horcrux.
But the beginning of this, one's fucking awesome. Where they have to move Harry.
Oh, yeah.
And Snape tells them when they're moving him.
Yes, this is pretty cool. Yeah, you know, they're kind of casual about flying over the roads and...
Yeah, like, especially when they're taking cars out.
Yeah, they're pretty casual about that. I don't know. Maybe you're just supposed
to... Does it work?
Maybe nobody can see them.
Yeah, are we supposed to take the same advice that the bus conductor said?
Yeah, that's right.
Prisoner of Azkaban, like, muggles don't see anything, do they?
I don't know. Maybe they're moving so quick that they can't see them. I don't know.
Maybe. So those people think that they just popped a tire.
Could be.
their RV flipped around.
Have you ever wanted to see Daniel Radcliffe in a dress? Now's your chance.
Ooh, in a bra.
In a bra.
But I think...
it's cool. I mean...
fucking Hedwig.
Yeah.
Fuck. Once again, unceremoniously, just like...
Yeah.
Hedwig, you got a song named after her. She's Harry's owl, and then gone.
Yeah, that's
worse
fucked.
Worse than when you find out Moody dies.
You know, I never really even thought about that. You're right. That is pretty fucked. I never really invested much thought into Hedwig's death, but you're right. The main theme is literally called Hedwig's Theme.
It's
the song everyone
knows. Exactly.
Damn.
So she's a big deal. But this is where things get kind of confusing with like the ownership of wands and everything.
Yeah,
like who steals whose wand? If and you who does really, it belong to now?
If you really started to like, you know, write shit out in an outline, you could probably find some flaws and some plot holes.
Yeah, because Harry and Voldemort have the same wands.
Yeah,
he can't do anything to him, so he takes Lucius's wand.
Right.
And yeah, and then it gets weird with the Elder Wand and who owns it, and. Malfoy's wand, and
is the last shot of this movie where Voldemort's opening his casket or his tomb or whatever. Okay,
yeah, and he takes the Elder Wand.
Okay,
you'd think he'd want to protect it a little.
Yeah, Dumbledore's tomb was pretty easy to crack into.
Yeah.
Anyways,
there is a lot that goes on in this because
there is.
You have the preparations for the wedding, Bill and Fleur's wedding.
Yeah,
and they come and attack that and just completely destroy the burrow.
Yeah. Is this where they burn down the Weasley's house?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's pretty fucked.
Yeah.
That's pretty fucked. Yeah, Ron's on his
Take
period
no
again in this movie.
Yeah, he is, but that's because he's got the locket on.
Oh, I understand, but God, he's kind of annoying.
Don't worry, he's not stealing her away.
Yeah, he's kind of annoying sometimes in the series.
He can be.
Like,
for sure.
Pussy boy. Especially in Goblet of Fire. Like, he should have known by that point that Harry's telling him the truth, you know? It's like, you guys have been good friends for 3 years.
For long
Why would
enough.
You suddenly not believe him, you know?
Yeah, what? You think Harry wants to put himself into that?
Yeah.
Everything he has to deal with already?
Anyways, moving backwards.
But this is also where we find out that... there's objects that are more powerful than the Horcruxes that can destroy them, and only those items can do it.
Yes.
The Gryffindor sword.
Yes.
Because it is impregnated with basilisk venom. And that's why the basilisk tooth could take out the...
Pretty cool.
Yeah. I'm like, who thinks of that? It's crazy.
Yeah, I don't know.
And then Ron runs away, like we said, and he comes back when he realizes everything's all good. I fucking love the running through the woods scene.
Oh, it's awesome.
When those Death Eaters come up on him.
This is a good movie. It's just, you know...
It takes a while to get to where it needs to go.
It's filler for the grand finale, you know. Mm-hmm. But it's good. I like it a lot.
But I think it's, I think it's necessary.
It is essential, yeah.
But then we also find out a little bit about Grindelwald, who stole the Elder Wand back
in the
day.
There is a lot going on in this movie. But this is the one that, out of all of them that I just kind of... I've seen it a few times now, but I couldn't really tell you a whole lot about it, you know? I don't know.
You need to pay attention to it.
Maybe I'm just spacing out.
Maybe. I mean, there's a lot that happens. You learn about Grigorovich, who is the one that he's a wand maker. I believe he created the Elder Wand.
Oh shit.
And he gets the wand stolen by Grindelwald.
Okay.
But then there's a scene where Voldemort goes and sees Grindelwald in Azkaban. He's like, "Where's the wand?"
Okay, yeah, that's right.
Like they buried it with him.
Fuck.
What do you think about the little animated scene talking about the Deathly Hallows?
It's funny because I think about that every time. I don't know what you call that style of animation, but I've seen it done before.
Yeah.
You know, it is what it is.
I think it's a good way to tell the story.
Right. You have to.
They are.
Yeah, it's fine. It's kind of presented as like a fairy tale sort of thing, which is what it is, you know?
Yeah.
So it's okay.
And then we get to probably my least favorite part of the whole franchise. when they're at the Malfoy Manor and Dobby helps them escape, Bellatrix throws a knife into their...
Okay. This shit is cool, though, because... Okay, there's a part... This is the one where they bring Harry back and his face is all fucking puffed up, right?
Yeah, they're trying to hide it.
So... At this point, Malfoy could have squealed on him.
He could have,
Which is cool. Doesn't. That's a big deal. Because he fucking knew that was him, you know?
He knew,
So I like that. This is the...
You start to see rips in the seams of Voldemort's people
That's true.
They're not as on board as he is.
Yeah, that's true. Bellatrix perfectly throwing that knife... Right at the right time.
Oh, man. God.
And you know what I love about that scene? I love how it's like
quiet.
And it's on the beach. I love that setting. I'm going to have to watch these again, and I just watched them. Fuck.
You miss a lot. Like, man. I feel like I pick up on something every single time I watch them.
God damn.
And that's why they're so good.
So good. God.
Dobby's got to be with friends.
Oh, man. Ugh. You know, it's like... It's crazy because you haven't really seen him since the second movie at this point, but you still feel like he's been there the whole way. So it's like a big loss, you know?
Because you know how much he cares about Harry.
Oh, shit. It's good. It is fucking good.
God damn it.
Man, oh, man.
And then part two picks up right where part one left off in the cottage on the beach.
I don't even know what to say about part two. It takes a lot to... Like I said earlier, seven movies were building up to this, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And fuck, man, I think that movie did a good... It didn't disappoint. It could have easily disappointed.
I don't think it could have been much better.
No, it could have easily disappointed, but it didn't. They hit all the right notes with it.
The Battle of Hogwarts is fucking incredible.
Fuck.
From the very beginning.
Sickest shit ever. It's like, seriously,
It's almost like in movies where they try to go to a place or bring in cameos for nostalgic factor.
Right.
It feels like they did it and it felt like it was necessary for it to be there.
It's just, dude. Okay, so I don't even know where to begin.
Well, this one starts out immediately.
Yeah.
They go to Gringotts and we're off.
Yeah.
It doesn't stop.
Okay. First of all, the Gringotts sequence is fucking badass.
It's awesome.
First of all, you get Emma Watson wearing the Bellatrix outfit, which is like, man.
It's
Yikes. Yeah. But it's great. It's fucking great. That whole thing with the dragon, Gringotts, it's like fucking crazy shit going on in there.
And then there's the flashback of, or not even the flashback, but like the thought of Voldemort in Gringotts, and there's blood everywhere. Oh. He's covered in blood. Griphook's dead.
See, the shit is dark, man. It's so one of the Horcruxes is in, it's Bellatrix safe, right?
Yeah, the cup.
Yeah. And they have, there's that enchantment that everything they touch multiplies by a bunch, which is awesome. Mm-hmm. Fuck, this is a great movie. This is like a perfect finale.
But something a little bit before that, when he's talking to Ollivander about who owns what wand.
Yes, yes.
And they're about to walk away, and Ollivander's just like, if he's coming after you, I'm afraid you really don't stand a chance.
Yeah, I mean, like, how awesome is that? Really think about it.
My God.
Go all the way back to 2001 when Harry's getting his first wand. Who's there talking to him about it? You know, it's Ollivander. Here he is, the last movie, about to have a showdown. Who's talking to him? Ollivander. Fucking, hey, dude. Man, I'm so glad, I'm so glad he didn't die before they could shoot that, you know? Like, mm-hmm. Man, so awesome.
Mm-hmm. I'm glad he made it through the whole way.
Fuck.
But it's just like one event after the other. They go to Gringotts, and then once they get there, they have to go back to Godric's Hollow, where Harry came from.
That's a whole other thing. Like, holy fuck, how cool is that? You know, it's like the whole movie you've been hearing about his parents dying, and now you're like at the spot. You know, it's like such a damn.
Well, in part one is when they actually go to the grave.
Yeah. Fuck.
Of his parents.
That's right. Which... That's right. Dude.
And then they see Bathilda Bagshot, and it's actually Nagini. And but anyway, yeah, they go back to Godric's Hollow, and they come across Dumbledore's brother Aberforth, who Kieran Hines, the actor who plays him, I really like him as an actor.
Really good.
How much did you really know my brother?
Fuck.
Like, this is when we start to find out Dumbledore's a fucking scumbag.
Yeah, which is kind of crazy, you know. I don't know, man. We could have just talked about this last movie because there's so much going on in it, you know? It's
the last one is there's so much happening. So much necessary stuff happening. Because I thought I broke my glasses. Then they open up the passageway, which is a painting of the sister.
Yes.
And her name is Ariana, I believe. Ariana Dumbledore.
God damn.
And who pops out from the passageway but Neville Longbottom.
Let me tell you something. In that scene when Harry comes, like, they show him at Hogwarts again.
The music. Yeah!
Holy.
The fucking music that plays.
Fuck. I got chills. So good, dude.
Oh, man. Like, oh, my God. Harry's back in Hogwarts.
Dude, when I, like, the other day I rewound that, like, 5 times to watch that part. So good.
And then he comes down and he's like, we have to find something in the castle. We don't know where it is or what it is.
Oh, you mean they've been looking for this for 3,000 years? Well,
oh, the lost diadem?
Yeah, don't worry.
Oh, yeah.
Harry will find it in an hour.
It's because he imagined it.
That's true. You just gotta, you know, whatever. But, man, it's fucking
great. And then they split off.
How about that showdown, though, in the Great Hall with Snape?
Oh, my God.
And fucking Harry.
McGonagall.
And McGonagall steps in front of Harry. And, like, you know, McGonagall's been a staple in the series since the beginning. You know, she was in the very first scene of the series. But this is, like, the first time where you can really see she's, like, a protector, you know? And
she's a protector, and the look on Snape's face when she walks in front of him.
Yeah.
Like, I don't want to do this with you.
Fuck.
I don't want to do this.
What the fuck, dude?
And then what's crazy is the guy on his left, that's Ralph Ineson from The Witch.
Oh, that's right. Thomasine. Whole time, like I said earlier, I'm just thinking in my head how much, like, think of that first movie. The Great Hall was all bright. They're having parties and shit. And now it's, like, dark and fucking Snape is dueling fucking McGonagall. It's like, this is so fun.
Yeah.
All I gotta say, though, if you were a parent and your kid was a first year, why the fuck would you send your kid to Hogwarts at this time?
Yeah, right? Why would you?
It's like, there should be no first years there. I would not send my kid there.
It's not the time.
But anyways, it's fucking badass, dude. And then they start locking down the castle, which is just...
when they do the spell, and then the spell with the stone guards.
That's one of the coolest moments. Pietà locomotive, or whatever the fuck she
said. I always wanted to use that spell. Dude,
so good.
But there's a lot of things happening at one time, because while that's happening, Hermione and Ron, they go to the Chamber of Secrets again.
Okay, that's another thing I want to talk about. It's like they just walked to the front door of the Chamber of Secrets.
Well, so, they knew how to get there.
Well, did they go to the sink and drop down?
Maybe, yeah.
Well, how did they get up? Because in the second movie, the fucking Phoenix brings them back.
You have to imagine that they probably made an entranceway since they know where it is now.
Okay.
Because the whole thing is they don't know where it is.
You're right. Because it looked like they just walked to the front door of the Chamber of Secrets. And in my head, I'm thinking,
yeah.
So did they like fall down the sink again to get down here? But really cool callback, though. I love how the skeleton of the basilisk is in there. It's fucking awesome. Like, if you're a kid watching that, it's like, whoa, dude, this is like pulling back some memories, you know?
It's like a necessary callback that doesn't feel cheap.
Yeah.
But while they're doing that, Harry's going to go talk to Ravenclaw. Is it Rowena? No, it's Helena. He's going to go talk to Helena, played by, you know, she's played by.
No, who is she played by?
Trainspotting? The chick from Trainspotting.
Which one?
What's her name? Kelly McDonald.
She's Ravenclaw?
You didn't know that? Helena Raina?
No.
You didn't know that was her?
No, and I was vividly paying attention to that movie because I'm like excited for the battle coming up.
Well, I guess because she looks like a ghost, but I'm surprised the voice didn't give it away.
Damn, she's hot.
He defiled it with dark magic!
Shit, I didn't even realize that. A couple Trainspotting actresses in this series.
I prefer seeing a bunch of the actors from this in The Borrowers.
Wow. The Borrowers?
Tom Felton, Mark, whoever plays Arthur Weasley. And then, it doesn't matter. Slughorn's in it, too. I like that movie. But they ended up going to the Room of Requirement to get the diadem, and...
It's that easy.
They get followed by,
Draco and his fucking...
And his henchmen.
Crab.
And fucking Goyle dies.
Does he?
He falls in the fire.
Oh, I didn't know he died. That's fucked.
Well, he fell in fire.
I guess you're right. This is another big moment because Harry, Mr. fucking nice guy beta boy, gotta just save Draco. Should just let him fucking die, but whatever.
Yeah.
Awesome shit, though.
Awesome shit.
Oh, man. Now, can we talk about the shot of, like, Voldemort and his army just, like, up on the hillside looking down at Hogwarts?
Oh,
like,
my God.
What in the fuck?
Begin.
I mean, dude, I think this is, like, one of the greatest films. I really do. Like, I really do think that. Like, wow. Jesus Christ.
Fucking amazing. And then when they can't get it done and he realizes, oh fuck, you found another Horcrux.
Oh man,
he's
fuck.
It just blows the whole thing up.
Dude.
I fucking love the scene when they're converging onto the castle, and it's like that one long shot where it goes into the window.
Oh.
And you see Arthur, Kingsley fighting him off.
So
Kingsley
dude,
does
so
the
awesome.
Spell on It just shows the grand scale of the whole thing.
It really is something else.
And then, there's that shot where it's McGonagall in the forefront, and everybody's running, and the explosions in the background.
Yeah, man.
It's just so weird to see Hogwarts in this kind
of
situation.
Like I said, it was such a build-up from 7 movies before this, and it's, man, it lives up to it. You know, it really does.
Getting fucking chills
talking about it. Like, when you hear for 7 movies about the Dark Lord and all this bullshit, and then in the last movie you see him standing at Hogwarts with his fucking army, it's like surreal almost. Even it's weird. It's fucking weird. So few movies like make me feel that way. Like what the fuck, you know?
Well, after that we get I was lying. I think this may be my favorite part of
the whole thing. There's so much to talk about in this film. I mean,
well, Voldemort gets in. He's talking to Snape. He's like, "Snape, you're the owner of the wand. I have to kill you. This is it." Nagini takes him out, and this is like when I saw. I didn't read the book. So
I saw this in theaters.
It was like. The biggest twist I've ever seen.
Imagine not knowing this was coming,
Take them to the pond sieve.
Oh my god.
And the music that plays, Severus and Lily.
Holy fuck.
He's in love with Lily. Is Lily in love with him, though?
I'm still kind of... Okay, so like, James bullied Severus, right?
James and his marauders, yeah.
Okay. So, like, why does he take that out on Harry, though?
Resentfulness.
Okay.
I guess.
But he always had good intentions, which you find out.
Well, I think he sees his dad.
He sees his dad.
He always says, "You're just like your father."
Right. Okay. That makes sense.
But he loved Lily so much.
And, you know, he's always protecting him. Even if you go back to the third film when they're about to get attacked by a werewolf fucker.
He blocks
him
off.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's... The signs have always been there.
And it makes it even better when you go back and watch those movies and see those little things.
Yeah. Yeah, dude. Man, what the fuck? So
good. And the look on Harry's face when he brings his face out of it.
Yeah.
Just looking right at the camera and you're like,
what the fuck? Huge, like, what is, you know, I had no clue the whole time, you know?
Yeah.
Wow, dude.
And then he realizes what he has to do.
Holy fuck.
He has to die.
Jesus Christ. Oh, so yeah, that's the point where he hears the, Harry,
meet me in the Forbidden Forest.
Meet me in the Forbidden Forest.
Like some of the best dick. ASMR.
Yeah. So there he goes.
Innocent blood has been spilled.
Holy fuck.
I will kill every last man, woman, and child.
This movie's amazing. It really is. I've never seen, there's like... few movies that have so much like epic shit going on and like the same
it's crazy. I want to skip the rest and just watch it tonight.
And I'm like not an action guy, you know. I don't like action movies. This is an action film.
I think action.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. He goes to the Forbidden Forest to accept his fate, drops the resurrection stone and gets fucking obliterated. Talks to Dumbledore in death.
Talks to Dumbledore in death. And then what really happens here? How does he come back to life?
The resurrection stone that he dropped.
Okay, the resurrection stone, which is one of the Deathly Hallows. Mm-hmm. And then
he sees the weakened form of Voldemort.
And then hot ass Malfoy mom comes up to check on him. And she bluffs, which is awesome.
This is what I mean. Like the seams are being ripped to Voldemort's whole cause.
Because, you know,
Draco.
Yeah.
Is he alive? Draco. Fuck. And he just gives the slight.
Yeah. Oh, man. So awesome.
Dead.
Yeah. So awesome.
And then Hagrid picks him up, brings him back to. Like everything.
I can't even talk about this, dude. This movie might be one of my like top 10 movies ever. Now that I'm talking about it this way, because
it's up there,
dude. Think about the events of the first movie. Who was carrying Harry as a baby?
Yeah, it goes real full circle.
Fuck. And now he's dead, supposedly.
Yeah.
Hagrid's carrying his corpse. How poetic is that?
Even before that, when he sees Harry, he's like, "Harry, no! What are you doing?"
God.
And the fucking part where Neville has his speech. Like, that's Neville's true. Neville's more of an alpha than Harry.
Suddenly Neville is cool in this film.
Yeah, and sexy.
Which is fine, you know? It's good for him. It works. Wow.
He has his whole speech, and Harry just jumps out of Hagrid's arms, and... The way the camera zooms in on Voldemort and his look.
When he jumps out of his arms, oh my god. Holy fuck. He didn't die in vain. But you will.
You will. And he's just like the pure fear on Voldemort's face when he knows that Harry's not dead.
Man, so awesome. Fuck.
And then, the fight continues, I guess. Like, we don't really see the fight continuing, right? It's just Harry and Voldemort going at it, really.
Yeah, honestly, I mean, they don't really have, like, as big of a showdown as you might think, I guess.
Like, it's not elongated.
No, but the whole...
But I guess this is also the part where Molly takes out Bellatrix.
Which is awesome, by the way. But the first time I saw that she calls her a bitch, I'm like, what the fuck? Where did this come from?
Yeah.
I don't really know how she kills her, though, because she doesn't... I don't know what she used.
Yeah, it's
on
almost
her.
Like she turned her into like an ice cube and then like broke the ice cube.
Petrified her and then like shattered her. But it's cool.
I guess it's the same way that Tom dies.
It's fucking cool, I'll tell you that.
But yeah.
Just hearing her call someone a bitch. It's like, wow.
After being like the sweet, kind mother throughout
the
whole thing.
Fucking bitch word.
And then Harry and Voldemort meet at the top of the clock tower, I believe.
Oh my god.
And he's like, come on, Tom.
Dude.
Let's finish this.
Him calling him Tom is so fucking badass. Man.
And then...
That's fictional, they're characters or whatever, but...
You have to imagine that gets under his skin.
Yeah, like thinking, what would Voldemort think at that point where he's calling him Tom? You know, like...
That's like, I got you.
That's some badass shit, dude.
I got you, motherfucker. I got you.
Whoa.
And then they fly around and... They connect. Like, they are one.
They connect. And then, one of the sickest fucking wand sequences where they're just like this big fucking... I don't even know what's going on, but it's awesome. So
it's just
cool.
Like one last touching of tips.
Yep, touching of tips. That's what's going
Neville takes out Nagini right at the right time. And
awesome shot, too, by the way. Neville swinging the sword of Gryffindor.
And the echo.
Oh, my God.
And then... Instead of, well,
oh, wait, does
Harry,
Neville picks up the sorting hat, doesn't he?
He takes it out of the sword.
And then, the sword appears in the hat.
Yeah.
Right?
Just at the beginning of, or like during his speech.
Yeah.
He just has the hat in his hand. And yeah. He's like, but you will. Oh, and rips it out.
Man, so cool.
And then, what do you think about the way that Voldemort goes out? Do you think it's... anticlimactic?
I could see why people might think that, but if you're going, the whole plot is the Horcruxes, so
he's not. Yeah, he's not human anymore,
right? He's weakened big time at that point. So, I think it's great. I don't ever feel disappointed by it. That whole build up and then just the fact that they're like fighting on Hogwarts territory is like on the grounds is badass. You know, I think it's great. I think it's perfect.
I think at a certain point I didn't care for it, but yeah. I think it's better than him just hitting him with the killing curse and he just falls.
Yeah, no, I agree.
I think the fact he disintegrates away is better.
It wouldn't be right. It would be out of character for Harry to. Yeah, I mean, no, it's perfect. And then the wand comes back to him and he grabs it and holy shit.
Lineage of the wand, it ends up that he owns it. It's his. And instead of what he could have done, become a master of death, he just breaks it in half. He's like, I'm fucking done with this.
Breaks it like a pussy. and that's the end, basically.
That's essentially it. Well, 19 years later, what do you think of this scene? Don't like it.
I don't like it. And it pains me to say that because literally everything about this movie is perfect.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't like this part.
I think the best part about that final shot is the Leaving Hogwarts song coming on.
Couldn't agree with you more, my brother. That's awesome. It's like
everything
full circle
else,
shit.
Yeah.
It's just too weird. It's like...
They were just children and now they're adults and I don't want to see Hermione kiss her daughter like an adult.
I wish
she's a child.
I wish they would have just like. I wish it just would have faded out after he fucking broke the wand or something. You know, I don't know. I mean, it's
like the way it does.
Yeah, like,
and then they add it.
It does. The movie's so good that it doesn't bother me. It's not horrible. Yeah. You know, it's not like a. It's just kind of like out of place, and I don't know. It's just strange to me. But
yeah,
I agree. The use of the music, fucking A. And it is kind of cool to see, like, you know, his son getting on the train and finding his own compartment, and you know, it's a total full circle thing.
Full circle, just like they did.
Yeah.
Except he has knowledge of it because he grew up in it.
I mean, it's quite the journey. Wow.
And then now we'll talk about the cursed child.
Wow. I read about that because you were telling me that
it sounds horrible.
Yeah. Holy shit.
Time turner and like he's a Slytherin.
Make another story about Harry Potter. Just make another Harry Potter book.
Tell us about his life as an Auror.
See, I wish she wouldn't have done that epilogue because then it would have just been open ended, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I'm sorry, you know, fuck it. They can bring Voldemort back. None of the shit really makes sense anyways when you really think about it.
It's all magic.
It's fucking ridiculous. Yeah, they could bring him back or find something.
He came back once already.
But I don't know. That last film's amazing.
Yeah, it's. Well, shall we rattle off our ratings real quick?
Let me consult mine.
Did you make a list?
I did. Yeah, it's on private. Not that anyone.
So is mine.
Not that anyone gives a fuck. But I really thought hard about this.
I did too, and I still feel like it could change.
Oh, it could, and it probably will. You go ahead.
Okay. You want to just give one at a time?
Sure. Let's start with your least favorite.
Okay. So my least favorite, number 8.
Okay. We doing this by favorite or film quality? Your best to worst.
My favorites. Oh, the ones that I let.
Okay. This is favorites. Okay.
Mine's kind of the same, I guess.
Okay, okay.
It's kind of, you can kind of interchange it with
okay.
that.
Okay, let's do
so.
Number 8.
Number 8 is Chamber of Secrets for me. It's my least favorite. I think it's, like we talked about, the one that has the least to say.
That is my number 8, too.
Yeah.
But number 8, number 7 could interchange with each other, really.
I feel like mine could, too.
Yeah.
Mine's Goblet of Fire.
Okay. My number 7 is Prisoner of Azkaban.
That's
not me being a contrarian.
Well, that's my number 6 is Prisoner of Azkaban.
Okay, so we're on the same page.
Notice a theme here that the first half are in the bottom.
Yes.
Bottom 4.
That's true. Number 6 for me is Deathly Hallows Part 1, and I don't even like ranking any of these because I love all of them.
I don't dislike any of them.
Even number 8. Dude, I've watched Chamber of Secrets. I could watch that anytime. It's a
blast. I'd watch Chamber of Secrets over most things.
It's a blast. So I don't like ranking them, but number 6, Deathly Hallows Part 1. Seems drags on a little bit for me.
Understandable. Well, my number 5 is Deathly Hallows Part 1.
Okay. Number 5 for me is Goblet of Fire.
Understandable. So we're somewhat
the
same.
We're pretty close here, yeah.
Yeah, different order, but I think actually they're all exactly the same, just different order.
Just different order.
Our bottom 4 are the same.
Yeah.
So that means that I think we might have the same thing
I'm
here.
I'm curious. Let's hear number 4.
My number 4 is Half-Blood Prince.
Okay, this is probably where we're off track a little bit because
okay.
My number 4 is Order of the Phoenix. But again, like with 7 and 8, 3 and 4 could either or. So it's hard. Yeah. This is a hard list.
It is a hard list. I feel like my top 4 is not as interchangeable.
Yeah.
Because my number 3 is Order of the Phoenix.
Okay, and that's Half-Blood Prince for me. So we got 1 and 2 are the same, probably.
I think 1 and 2 are the same. Number 2 is Sorcerer's Stone.
Yes, yes.
Number 1 is Deathly Hallows Part 2.
Yep, and I did this on, like, film quality, I guess. Mm. While, you know, like, Sorcerer's Stone is a kid's movie. It's a little, it's kiddie, but it's like a masterpiece, you know.
It's a lot of fun.
Yeah, and if I was doing this by favorites, I'd probably put the first one as my favorite. But, you know, in terms of film quality, I think that's that last part. Deathly Hallows Part 2 is just next level type of shit, you know.
Yeah, it's hard to go away from that.
Yeah,
because the first one begins everything perfectly, and the Deathly Hallows ends everything.
Yeah, it's
almost perfectly.
It's quite the journey. Yeah, just cut off that last 5 minutes, and it'd be golden.
Yeah, just cut off the movie at that point.
Yeah, wow. Well,
I don't even know how long the episode was. I just kept talking.
It'd probably be like 2.5 hours.
Well, it's like the length of a Harry Potter movie.
Yeah, it'd probably be at 2:15.
Damn, 220?
Yeah.
Good thing we didn't put anything else in.
No, that was, wow. Well, we wanted to do this because I know
I'll kill myself if this is, if something messes up.
Yeah, seriously, this might kill the podcast if this doesn't work, so, one of these, at the very least, the Zoom will work.
Yeah.
No, we wanted to do this because I think they're important films to both of us in terms of, like,
very much so.
How we appreciate film now. I think the Harry Potter movies are a big part of that. And we've never really taken time to just, like, dedicate just to talking about them. So with the 20th anniversary, you know, it was a lot of fun to rewatch these and to kind of break them down. I mean, I think we fucking covered a lot, man. A lot.
We could have gotten way deeper,
oh,
too.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So. And I just feel like they're very important to me. I grew up literally with Harry Potter.
Yeah.
When I was in first grade, he was in his first year.
Yeah.
When I was in, it's just like I grew up with it. So.
I mean, you know, there's things that happen in your life where you don't, you never forget where you were or whatever. I will never forget going in to watch the first movie the day it came out and seeing those characters on the screen for the first time and just being like, this is fucked, you know, this is incredible. So it's
everything I could have hoped it would be.
Yeah, very big deal. Guys, if you're listening, you made it this far. Wow. You guys in you British guys are probably like, fucking shut up about Harry Potter already. They gotta get sick of hearing about that shit over there. I bet they're like fucking, oh, that shit's gotta be annoying, sure. You know.
But I'm curious, like we talked about earlier, did you know who these actors were when you watched the movies?
Like
was it a different perspective, a different viewing, a different viewing experience for you?
I mean, what
who these people were.
What a ballsy thing, though, to like attach Chris Columbus and John Williams to a film with an all British cast. And I mean, it's just,
yeah,
it's unprecedented sort of shit. You know, it's very weird. So,
well, and an American screenwriter too.
Yeah, I mean, just how wild. So, let us know. What do you think about the Harry Potter films? Tell us your ranking. Very curious.
Yeah, yeah.
This is episode 161 of the Cinema Scumbags podcast. Nick, you got anything else?
You're a wizard, Harry.
I'm not Harry. I am. Oh.
I can't be a wizard. I'm Harry.
Perfect example of kids trying a little bit too hard, but whatever. Great fucking movies.
Fake acting.
We love them. Hope you guys enjoy this episode. Episode 161 in the books. Thank you guys for listening. And as always, go fuck yourselves. My body's gone.
My body's gone. My body's gone.